This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Andrea Darlis is in studio with us today as Ro is taking the day off. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, Anna. Thank you for having me. This is wonderful.
Good you get to be sitting in. Pat Brady will also be sitting in for some of the show today, which we're happy to have him because much is going on in the world of politics and beyond. We see a looming shutdown in Washington. You just heard in Judy's News the president spoke moments ago saying that he will not sign that stopgap measure to keep the government open unless the money is included for border security and specifically the border wall. Remember, he's asking for $5 billion. Democrats were willing to do the $1.6 billion. He says, no way, no how. I don't care if you've already left for vacation, as many lawmakers kind of have. Come on back, he says. We will absolutely shut down the government over this. So that's where things sit. They have until midnight tomorrow night to get this all sorted. And at that point, the government will shut down. So we'll keep people posted. We're going to check in with ABC News later today to see what's happening this afternoon, because a lot is happening on this. Sometimes it's a sleepy Thursday before you go into the holiday weekend.
It's true, right?
You follow this, right? It sort of feels in the news world.
Yeah, and everybody's off, or, you know, things are coming kind of to a slowdown before the holidays, before Christmas, and not so much, boy.
Today, a lot going on. So we will also talk to John Cass. He had an interesting column in the Chicago Tribune today about who should get out of the mayor's race. He's got a theory about what's wrong with it, and there are too many candidates. We all sort of feel that there's some sort of shakeout coming, but he has his mindset on who needs to get out of the race. We'll ask him about that, and also the 13th Ward and the situation there.
There are so many candidates in this race. Oh my gosh, 21 at one point.
Right, hard to keep track. And then, you know, you have a few here who really haven't organized a political committee yet and haven't raised any money, and you think, well, I don't know what the future is for them, but you still have quite a few candidates, I think 16, that are still planning to be in this race as of right now.
And it's interesting, too. I want to talk to you and John about the makeup of this race as well, because early on, I think we kind of thought, oh, maybe Vallis and Gary McCarthy. Now it's completely shifted, and we're thinking, oh, maybe more Preckwinkle Mendoza show off.
It's interesting, because that's sort of how John Cass divides them. He says there's the pre-ROM announcement, and then there's the post-ROM announcement. And they had the pre-ROM are the ones that you just cited, Lori Lightfoot among them, who seemed to be the front runners at that time. And then now, after ROM announced he would not be running, you saw this slew of other high-powered names that we know enter the race. And there's some interesting polling out, too, that shows what would happen head-to-head with different people, what would happen with this crowded pack if the election were held today, kind of where things are headed there. Ben Bradley's also going to check in with us in a little bit. He took a look at mayoral petitions on this subject, or I think Lourdes Duarte actually did the story, but he'll be talking to us about it, investigating if people... did they really sign their petitions? There's so much made of petitions, right? Everyone tries to knock each other out of the race. Are your petitions legitimate? Do you have the right address? Are you in the right area? Is everything check out the way it's supposed to? And now the investigative team over at WGN TV is taking a look at those petitions.
I'm glad they did. That always was curious to me too, Anna, because how can you get 25,000 signatures, especially if you hopped in the race later, you know, the post Mayor Emanuel saying he's not going to run announcement. How do you get that many signatures?
Very difficult to get. And the other thing that comes to be a factor there too is if you've already signed a petition, then you can't sign two petitions.
Or that would someone else's, right?
Somebody else's petition. Yeah. So it's there's a complicated methods there of trying to get the number you need in order to get on the ballot. And it's not easy to do, but we're seeing now that they're taking a closer look at those petitions. And we'll be talking about that as well. We have a top five at five you won't believe today. ABC News' Andy Field is going to check in with us the latest on that government shutdown situation. And we were talking, and this is interesting. Just yesterday, it made news, and it's grown substantially since. This GoFundMe page by a Purple Heart recipient, a man who says he has great contacts within the government, said, I'm going to raise $1 billion on GoFundMe for the wall.
Right.
Regular citizens need to step up.
Yep. $6.9 million he's raised so far, or this page. Brian Colfage, he's a triple amputee veteran, and he says he's going to raise this money. But you brought up a very good point at the start of the show. You raise this money, what do? Write a check to the government?
The U.S. Treasury?
Yeah, and in the memo, right?
In the memo, you put for wall purposes only. You know, you have to be very specific if you want it to go to something.
Exactly.
I don't know how that happens, but he says he's got contacts in the government, and he's going to, you know, he'll make sure it goes the right place. And I think the rules of GoFundMe are that it has to go to where you say it's going to go, or else people get their money back. But $1 billion, I wonder if that's the largest ever.
I would think he would make fundraising this goal campaign. At this rate, he's close to 7 million right now.
And he started it, what, yesterday?
Yesterday. 2 days ago it started.
2 days ago.
So by the end of the day, he could feasibly have $1 billion toward the wall.
You know, I just looked at it 2 hours ago, and it was at 5.4 million. You said it's how much now?
6.972 million.
It's growing so fast.
It's almost, if I refresh again, probably after the headline tease, it would probably be after 7 million.
Still a long way from the 5 billion the president wants and needs, but the goal here is 1 billion, and wow, that would be something if they were able to raise that. So the president earlier today said he brought in the House of the GOP leadership, and he said, let's all meet because there's a problem here. And Speaker Ryan came out just hours ago and said, you know, the president is saying we need border security, and that's the focus, and mm-hmm. The government will shut down if we don't get that piece of it in order to pass. So that's where things sit in Washington right now.
If he signs, though, a short-term spending bill to avoid a partial government shutdown, that'll hold us till February 8th.
Yeah.
So why not do that?
I think that Pat Grady might want to jump in here, but one of the issues is that the Democrats will then control the House.
Yeah, they couldn't agree on anything, so this was a short-term solution.
So that's where it is. We're going to hear more from Pat Brady because he's going to sort it all out for us and explain what the heck is going on in Washington because he knows these things.
Quite a leap, I think.
No, you will. I know you will because I have every faith in you. But that's coming up. First, let's check in with Judy Pilot because we've got WGN-TV's Ben Bradley also showing up here in just a few minutes. But Judy, what is happening at the bottom of the news?
As you've been talking about, President Trump doubling down on his wall.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Speaking of WGN-TV, we're checking in with Ben Bradley over at Bradley Place. Hi, Ben.
Hello, Anna. Wonderful to be with you.
Oh, so nice to be with you. You know, Pat Brady is in studio along with Andrea Darlis, and Pat had just said something. What did you say, Pat? I'm not sure I could phrase it exactly as you did.
I just wondered when we heard about what Ben was going to report on. It sounded like Lourdes did all the work, but you just kind of were reporting on it.
Actually, I can confirm today that is the case.
Okay, well,
she's got an investigative piece on later today that's actually right up all your alleys. So
let's hear about it.
So you've heard about these petition challenges, right, in the Chicago mayoral election.
Sure.
And you've seen people spending seven days a week challenging each other's petitions, literally going line by line, looking at each signature, because you got to get 12,500 valid signatures to appear on the ballot. So Lourdes got the idea to kind of take a look at, well, who's doing the signing? Do they even know whose petitions they're signing? And then when one of these signatures gets challenged, and someone else shows up at their door to say, hey, did you sign this? And they say, well, I don't remember. Okay, sign this affidavit that says you didn't originally sign. It just, this whole story will show you how ludicrous the entire process is in the city of Chicago to be on the ballot.
Yeah, and you think with this many candidates, you know, 21 at some point, I mean, how is it possible that all of them did get that pretty high bar number of signatures needed to get those petitions in and make them legit?
Right, and you can't sign more than one person's petitions as the law currently stands right now. So, you know, this isn't a case where somebody walks up to you and says, hey, would you, you know, sign a Tony Preckwinkle petition? And you say, well, yeah, you know, I'm all for as many people as possible being on the ballot. Because then if you go sign a Mendoza petition, it's invalid.
So right.
It's a messy, messy process. And if you think, if you're sitting at home hearing about it, thinking, oh, well, this is kind of fun because the politicians are kind of, you know, fighting with each other, eating their own, if you will, we're paying for it in some regards because the Chicago Board of Elections has to staff up to handle all of these petition challenges.
Great point. And so the petition challenges, are they over now, Ben, that you
know
of?
No, they're still going. And there's some talk because there are so many candidates and so many challenges. Originally, there were about 180 objections filed that early voting in the mayoral race could be delayed.
Ben, we knew Lourdes did this, but do the election judges have to go line by line by line on every single petition? Are they supposed to go line by line to verify these or validate these?
So there are a lot of people who know a lot more about this than I do, but my understanding is you've got a representative of the candidate who's challenging, you've got a representative of the candidate who's being challenged, and then you have a Board of Elections representative. And Yes, those three people go line by line by line.
Sounds like fun.
Well, what you do is you get you get your people in there. It can be a whole bunch of people that work for either side. So it could be a room full of people. Right, yeah,
right. It could be a party, in other words, you're saying. Yeah.
And there are political operatives who make a lot of money and political lawyers who make a lot of money doing this and knocking people off the ballot. And it's a wild scene. So Lourdes is going to get into that. Her full story airs tonight at 9 o'clock.
Is there anything else that Lourdes Duarte has done for the WGN TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, or 10?
Yes, she is right now taping our promos. She'll be anchoring the 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10 p.m. news today. So, yeah, when you
what did you do
like
today,
that,
Ben?
Yeah.
Have you done
why don't
anything?
We get Lourdes a back brace?
I actually asked her if she wanted to come on the show today to
she's too busy. She's doing all the work.
Like, I'm
how
doing
she have
everything
time to
today,
come on?
Bradley. Exactly.
She's lifting weights in her spare time.
Exactly.
Right.
Although talking with Pat Brady, I'm reminded of, I think, probably one of the funniest lines he's ever uttered. He did it on election night here at WGN-TV. Pat, do you remember this? It was as we were waiting for J.B. Pritzker to come down and make his victory speech, and an anchor asked you, well, what's taking so long?
I do recall that, Ben, but I think you could you have that TV voice and face. You can. Why don't you tell me what I said?
So Micah asked Pat, so what do you think? What do you think's going on? Why are we waiting for J.B. Pritzker so long to come down? And Pat says on TV, well, Micah, I can tell you right now, he's probably explaining to his wife why he spent $100 million for a job that pays $100,000. Oh, and by the way, honey, we're moving to Springfield.
Yeah, we're moving
to Astor Street to go to Springfield.
Right. That's not a good trade. Yeah. It's really not.
At least it's been redone and renovated.
Although it's an honor to serve the people of Illinois, and I'm sure that's how MK feels about it, and so does JB. So
exactly.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Ben.
Merry Christmas to you and yours.
You
see
too.
Ben.
You got a lovely family. Have fun.
Great to be with you guys.
Thanks, Ben.
Get those kiddos something good. I know they're good.
Oh, wait. Was I supposed to get him something?
Yeah. You know what I suggest?
The have Lourdes do it.
Lourdes can go shopping for you. Is she getting? Did she get your dinner yet? Have you, no. have you got her? Are you ordering?
You want to hear the worst part? Is so
you actually did.
No. I gave her Christmas present, which is a week after her birthday. So she's gotten a Christmas present and a birthday present from me. And both times I stood there. I was like, well, I got to see what it is. She goes, what do you mean? I said, well, I didn't buy it. Molly bought it for you.
Right, your wife, yeah.
Oh,
I am such a slacker.
Hey, one suggestion, get your kids the yelly, okay? Look it up if you
what
don't know. The yelly?
The yelly.
It's when the louder the kids yell, the faster the little toy goes. Doesn't that sound cute? Isn't that really cute?
Oh.
Get that
you
form.
Weren't supposed to tell him to
know,
look
really?
It up.
I shouldn't have
just
told him.
Just get him the yelly. You'll love it.
Thanks.
We'll play the audio later because it's really fun to listen to. Thank you, Ben.
Real helpful, Devlante.
We are, you know, helpful. That's what we're here for. Tell Lourdes we said hi if she has time.
Yeah, she's
just
working
break.
Too hard to talk to you.
Bye, Lourdes.
Bye. Talk to you later, Ben. That was Ben Bradley. Now it's time for Judy's News, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Here's Judy Pilak.
We just had a very long, productive meeting with the president. The president informed us that he will not sign the bill that came over from the Senate last evening because of his legitimate concerns for border security. So what we're going to do is go back to the House and work with our members. We want to keep the government open, but we also want to see an agreement that protects the border. We have very serious concerns about securing our border. So the president said he will not sign this bill. So we're going to go back and work on adding border security to this, also keeping the government open because we do want to see an agreement.
Speaker Paul Ryan there expressing, summing up a meeting he had had just moments earlier with the president, saying that the president will not sign a stopgap spending measure to keep the government open unless it includes that border wall money that he wants added. Catching a lot of people by surprise, actually. In fact, some lawmakers were caught, you know, thinking that they were heading out of town. Some have already head out of town and went home and are now at home. And they said, what? Well, what's happening? But this is happening by tomorrow night at midnight. If they don't, lawmakers don't come to some sort of an agreement, the government does shut down. This is The Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Andrea Darlis here with us. Pat Brady, former chair of the Illinois Republican Party, is here as well. Pat, what do you make of all of this? It seemed that his day started with people, his core, his base, really sharply criticizing this president over not doing what he said he was going to do. And with the incoming dynamics of the House turning Democrat, We don't get the border wall now. You're never going to get it, President. What's happening? What are you doing?
Yeah, apparently that's what happened. I mean, he had a big day yesterday because he made the decision to pull out of Syria without consulting with the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense or any of the members of Congress or anybody from the intelligence community or anybody that knew anything about Syria. And then the next thing he does is tell, the Senate passes this short-term spending bill that doesn't have the money for the wall. And the president today says he's going to veto that if it doesn't. And the bill was over in the House. So it threw everything up in the air. So I'm not sure what's going to happen here because a lot of the senators are out of town. You can't send a bill to the president that hasn't been reconciled between the House and the Senate versions. So it'll be interesting to see. But I just know politically, shutdowns are bad politics, particularly when you own it. And the president's a
Republican. Definitely owns it. I think Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer got him exactly where they wanted him by having him admit in that live camera situation where he said, yeah, I'll be happy to shut down the government if we don't get the border wall.
And don't forget, in the middle of all of it, he signs the farm bill.
Right.
In the middle of everything. Just kind of a nice
which
little sandwich.
Which is a good piece of legislation.
Sure.
But I think what's happened here is really had a rough couple weeks with all the investigations in this. And a lot of people voted for the 33-34% that support and voted for this disruption of Washington. We want to do things differently. But when disruption becomes incompetence, and this is what we've seen this week, particularly what he's done here, he's irritating members of the Senate and just it's not getting the job done. And if you get a government shutdown over Christmas, remember, though, this is not a total government shutdown, mm-hmm. though. It's only 25% shutdown, but it's still a shutdown. It's really bad politics.
Well, you know, he woke up this morning and you wonder if this was the plan or if he felt the pressure. Because if you think about what the president's viewing habits are, Fox and Friends sharply criticizing him this morning, saying that what are you going to do? Well, we need the border wall. You promised the border wall. Stick to your promises. And then it went on to Ann Coulter with that scathing article she wrote about the president, calling him a joke president. He unfollowed her on Twitter. He only follows 45 people. He unfollowed her. Mm-hmm. And it felt as if it was really coming down on him and that perhaps, do you think it's possible? He just decided there and then, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and that's been his play all along, which is kind of interesting that he only plays to his base when it really matters, that 33-34% that he relies on. But that's not going to get him reelected, and that's really not good for the people in the Republican Party that are left in the House and the Senate. And I agree completely. I think he just reacted to all the bad press, which he does, because he does consume this press. There was no real thought process in it, and he just said, hey, I'm just not going to sign this. And it throws the government into chaos. And again, like you said, Anna, he said he owned this a week ago, and he's going to own it, and it's not going to be good for him.
Only 25%, you said, of the government would be shut down if this is not signed again. And so we kind of went through this 1 year ago.
Yeah, the government gets funded by a series of bills. It's not just one great big, it's usually a series of bills, and they've already passed 75% of it. But nonetheless, politically, it's seen as a shutdown.
Sure.
And shutdowns are never good.
Do you think it really can really harm the president, though, a shutdown with all the other things swirling in Washington right now? Maybe he just thinks, hey, look, I got to stick to these promises. This was one of my core issues on the campaign trail. Absolutely, people associate this with me. And if I'm seen as not fighting extremely hard for this, then that actually is more politically damaging than doing the opposite.
Well, to his base, but again, that's only the 33-34%. The rest of the people in the Senate and the House that maybe want a more reasonable approach to this, I won't agree. So again, he just plays to that small number, which I've never understood. Actually, there were a couple good articles this week out about that they are trying to advise him on how to broaden his base and so he can win in 2020. But moves like this, I don't think do that.
He says the president had a tweet a few hours ago, when I begrudgingly signed the omnibus bill, I was promised the wall and border security by leadership would be done by end of the year, now in caps. It didn't happen. We foolishly fight for border security for other countries, but not for our beloved USA. Not good. Can you explain what he's meaning there when he says that he signed the omnibus bill before?
They passed an earlier spending bill that didn't have the funding for the border wall in there. And now he's claiming that the Senate passed this version without it, that he's not going to sign it because of that. And maybe there's truth to that argument, but we're kind of late to be making that argument. That Senate bill has been percolating for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So why weren't you there then? And why didn't you tell the senators then that you were going to do that? I assume that most of them would not have left town.
And some Republican leaders are already saying that they'll vote on the $5 billion wall funding request. So what happens if they decide to do that? Is everybody happy then at that point? And we sign the
process, I believe, goes to the Senate's already passed the bill. It's sent over to the House. They have their bill and they make changes to it, which would be the $5 billion would be a change. And then I think if they can't get a concurrence, or it goes to the committee, a conference committee. But that, yeah, that could take a long time.
Wow.
Yeah. And so so now here, this is where we sit. And tomorrow night at midnight, it does shut down. I guess the employees of the federal government impacted would still get a check on, I think, the tomorrow. But then it would be impacted beyond that. So I suppose, you know, Christmas technically wouldn't be impacted. But, you know, beyond that, it certainly would be. It seems like something that, I mean, how long can something like this last? I mean, even politically, at some point, you're going to realize you're either going to get the funding or you're not.
Yeah, they usually, the longer they go, the more people, the more damaged it is politically. But I think in this environment, I think it's different than the previous shutdowns. I think people are truly, both here in Illinois and nationally, fed up with Congress and the president being dysfunctional. It's kind of like there's been so much white noise and nothing getting done that I think there's going to be a very limited tolerance for a government shutdown.
I agree.
We have a little bit of sound from the president. Again, he spoke just about an hour ago, giving his case to the nation about why he's doing this, why he surprised members of his own party to do this, and why the government will potentially shut down tomorrow.
I've made my position very clear. Any measure that funds the government must include border security. Has to. Not for political purposes, but for our country, for the safety of our community. This is not merely my campaign promise. This is the promise every lawmaker made. It is the solemn promise to protect and defend the United States of America. And it is our sacred obligation. We have no choice.
So, you know, you hear we have no choice.
Which is a lie. Right. It's just a lie. There is a choice, and there's a lot of people that don't think a cement wall is going to make a lot of difference. There are ways to secure the border, which we all agree upon. But this wall he's talking about is just a fantasy. Remember, Mexico was going to pay for it.
Mexico, right, he still was tweeting about that days ago, that Mexico will pay for it as part of the new NAFTA agreement. But no one's seen exactly how that might work, and no one quite knows that. But this is ultimately a political game, too, because Democrats are saying, okay, yeah, we like border security, too, but it doesn't seem as if there's any willingness to say, here's a real plan of what we would accept. It's just no wall, no wall, because we know that's your campaign promise, and we don't want you to make good on that.
Potentially, because they
honestly don't believe in it. But
yeah, no, there's it's D.C., so there's politics involved. But in my opinion, the politics for Republicans, this move is not good.
By the way, 7.227 million right now toward that GoFundMe. We the people will fund the wall.
It's got a long way to go to a billion, but it's still remarkable how quickly growing.
In 2.5 days.
It's that GoFundMe page, and it's a Purple Heart recipient, right? Started it?
It is. His name is Brian Colphage, and he is a Purple Heart recipient, triple amputee veteran, and he just started this GoFundMe page saying, "Hey, we'll fund the wall." But as you said at the start of the show, Anna, I don't know how this money is going to get to the federal government.
Plus, also GoFundMe,
specifically for the wall.
With GoFundMe, I thought you had to reach the goal in order for it to be distributed, and I think $1 billion is a lofty goal to get to, in a big number. But I think there's sort of a message there. Either way, if it grows to be a big number that I think the president would like to see. Pat Brady, let me ask you also about what's happening in the attorney general world today. We saw Rod Rosenstein come out today and talk about how the Donald Trump's attorney general nominee, William Barr, he sent a memo to the DOJ talking about how the special counsel has no right to pursue obstruction of justice charges against the president. And Rod Rosenstein weighed in today to say, look, that had no impact on this investigation. That doesn't matter. And I suppose it shouldn't impact him being the attorney general.
I guess it depends. I agree with you. It shouldn't. But he needs to be asked about it. And I'm sure he's got an explanation for it. The thing about law is there's always two sides sure. to every story. Mr. Barr's a very accomplished lawyer, and he was taking a position and probably wrote a brief in support of it. But just something that he needs to be asked about in the course of his confirmation hearings, because you can't prejudge something until you get there.
We've also got 2020 talk already, and I want you to weigh in on that. We've got the Joe Biden and the better
John Cass,
work.
I understand.
Yeah, well, John Cass is going to talk to us about the mayor's race.
Greek Americans are thrilled.
That's right. We're taking over.
But Joe Biden, Beto O'Rourke are the combo that you hear the most about now. And then you hear the women of the party saying, look, we're a very diverse party.
Amy Klobuchar.
Amy Klobuchar, huh? She's in there now, too. That's right. She's actually
among
the top 10.
I watched her last night for a while. She's very good.
Yeah. Kirsten Gillibrand, too. Right?
Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah, she's mad because she's not getting enough attention.
Is that it?
Yeah. I've seen she's... that's what I've been watching lately.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
I think she made some enemies back in a couple years ago, maybe with the Clintons and some things, some of the things she did. But she's very impressive. So is Amy Klobuchar.
What about Sherry Bustos on our level? Our local
Sherry
level?
Bustos should be president someday. She's
phenomenal. Well, I know you think that. She's done a great job.
She's from the western part of the state. That district that goes up and down, like I said, the central western part of the state. I think Trump won that district by 22 points, and she won it huge, too. So she's just a very – and she's on she has a leadership –
She does. You're right. Yep. She's got a leadership
position in the House.
Mm-hmm. You see, the Republican Party is, you know, there are so many issues with that. Will Trump run again? Is he going to at some point step down if the heat gets, you know, hot enough and with all of the investigations around him?
Well, the big development along that, Anna, was they have – there's the Republican National Committee and then there's the Trump campaign. They've streamlined that process to make it basically all one campaign, which I've never seen happen before. Actually, the RNC saved him in 16. So it'll be interesting that he's kind of co-opting all the processes in the party. And they're also trying to change the rules in New Hampshire about how the primary goes. So he's trying to consolidate all that power so to make it more difficult for somebody else to run. Yeah.
Do you think a Joe Biden can ultimately beat Donald Trump?
I think Joe Biden would be a very good candidate. He probably could. When you're polling numbers in the 30s, and 6 and 10 don't want you reelected, and we might be going into a recession, you're going to have a lot of problems. And we saw it here in Illinois. He lost by Illinois by a million votes. Mm. And I still contend we lost two congressional seats, Peter Roskam and Randy Holcomb, because he's so unpopular with suburban women. And the states that he won last time, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, he's not doing so well this time around. If he doesn't win those states, he doesn't win, even with Ohio.
How does the Republican Party reclaim suburban women? I think the easy answer would be have more women candidates, but that's not really all it is. It's about the platform. It's about the positions.
It's about tone, too.
About tone.
Great question. Great.
I think a lot of us Republicans are struggling with the party at a lot of levels, and the leadership that he's provided. I've been a Republican. I've been walking precincts since I was 10 years old. I cannot line up with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I think even it's more amplified, I think, with suburban women that just don't like the tone and the talk. And it creates a lot of opportunities for the Democrats. But I don't know what the party's going to do. But as long as I believe, as long as Donald Trump's at the top of the ticket, he's going to be a huge drag in a lot of this country. Not certain parts of the country, but a lot of the country. And it's going to be very difficult to recover from because 2020 is going to be a really bad year.
That's a great point, too, though. What about more female candidates? What about a Nikki Haley or somebody within the party already?
Nikki Haley would be fantastic. You got to have candidates that are relatable, more females that believe in the principles of the party. My issue always been with Trump is he doesn't espouse the principles of the party. It's all isolationism and this rhetoric about anti-immigrant and other issues.
Deficit.
The deficit. We've both been... Both sides have been bad on that, I think.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, do you think as the special counsel moves forward, and we don't know what the special counsel will say, but there are some signs that things are not good around this president right now. Do you think you'll see more Republicans breaking with him? Because so far, a number of them have been rather silent about it. Maybe just waiting for the special counsel to do his job, and that's fair enough. But what happens next?
I think everybody, and I think Senator Durbin actually said this week, that everybody just needs to sit back and wait for this report. Now, there's some politics in that, too. It's really bad politics for the Democrats long term, I think, it's very risky to go after impeachment. Remember when the Republicans went after that in the 90s, Bill Clinton left with a 56% approval rating. Mm-hmm. So the impeachment didn't work. So, in fact, that was 20-year anniversary was yesterday. So it's a very risky proposition. I think the Democrats would rather just see him ride this out, President Trump, and then get killed in 2020. The Republicans, historically, even when Richard Nixon was involved in the same process, it didn't break till the very, very end.
Okay, we're going to take a break here, but we want to come back and check in the mayor's race. And we know John Cass is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour. He has an interesting column about who should get out of the race, but there's some new polling for the race.
Does Cass cover city politics?
Of course he does.
A little bit, yeah.
Talking about. He's one of the voices in this community. We cannot wait to hear what he says.
I know
it's
listening.
It's a fun article. Yeah, that's why you said it. All right. I'm sure he'll have a thing or two to say to you, Pat Brady. Just watch out, all right? We're going to check in now with Judy Pilek, see what's coming up top of the hour in the WGN News.
Another brutal day on Wall Street as a government shutdown looms.
Traffic sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pilek from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Quickly here, Pat Brady, we want to ask you We saw that Toni Preckwinkle dropped her challenge of the petitions for Susana Mendoza. There's a reason why she might want to challenge that specific person, because there is a new poll out that shows head-to-head, these two front runners, she might not fare that well.
Yeah, I think even beyond that, I think she was challenging everybody, every woman of color.
Yeah. That's right. Lori Lightfoot was also amongst the people she's been
Eric Adelstein, we did the show with Cochran on Thursday mornings. He made a great point, too, that if you're going to do something like this, you got to win. Otherwise, you make the other party stronger. So Susana Mendoza surviving this, I think, has made herself a lot stronger. Plus, I think it plays into her narrative of being she's fighting the machine, and she's going to portray Chairman Preckwinkle as part of the machine. So I'm not sure it was the smartest political move. I heard another thing they did, and we were just talking about this. They had a great disinformation machine out there convincing everybody that Susana Mendoza was going to get kicked off the ballot.
Everyone heard
it
the rumors,
some real
and it
people.
Did not happen.
And I think the effort there was to try to hurt her fundraising. That didn't work either.
Well, we want to hear from John Cash about who should get out of the mayor's race. Interesting stuff from John Cash right after Judy's news coming up in 2 minutes. Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro is taking the day off, and we have Andrea Darlis in studio. We have Pat Brady in studio, and we are being joined now by Chicago Tribune's John Cass. John, we loved your article today. We've been talking national politics, but we want to switch local here in the mayor's race. Mm-hmm. And this idea that you're saying some people need to get out of this race, inevitably there will be a shakeout, but you have delineated exactly who should get out, and tell us what you think should happen here.
Okay, I don't want to sound like a Star Trek, junkie, and I don't want to get Pat Brady all excited, because you know he is. Already he's chomping at the bit.
He's been taking a few digs at you, John. Let's be honest.
I just was saying before you came on, I didn't know John covered city politics. So
he's a friend of mine, so I know. I can feel his vibe from
right
here.
That's not a vibe.
No, it's anger. I got it. I got it, but here's the deal. If you didn't think Chicago was in trouble, and if you didn't join in the mayoral race when Rahm Emanuel was in it, why should you be coming in now when the water's warm and everything's safe? Bill Daley, Gary Chico, Susana Mendoza, and Toni Preckwinkle, as far as I'm concerned, bye, Felicia. Go.
But you just mentioned the people who actually are among the front runners and certainly the top fundraisers in this race.
One thing, here's the thing we know. Being a raising funds and having a personality does not run a city, okay? Because you know why? Rahm Emanuel proved that, right, didn't he? He proved that.
Bill Daley now with, what, $3 million, the top of the pack there in terms of his fundraising?
How many times did Bill Daley call Pat Brady and say, kick Cass's butt? Come on, Bill. Come on, Pat.
Are you on Bill Daley's side over there, Mr. Pat Brady?
John, given my history in predicting winners, from now on, I'm for whoever wins.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Didn't you say that Donald Trump would never, ever, 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 ever be president in the history ever?
That's okay. Give him one.
Hey, but John, how does this shake out in the city? What vote has to come from where for somebody to prevail here? Just in the high level.
Well, here's the problem. We're talking 20 candidates, which means 10%, maybe a little over 12% gets you in, right?
Right.
And that means that we're dealing with a scenario where you could have Dorothy Goat Lady Brown, on the ballot in April, along with, say, I don't know, somebody else who doesn't know what to do. And that just can't be. Man, it just can't be. We got to start thinking rationally. The people who were in the race when Rahm was strong before, he got that disease. What's it called, Pat or Andrea? It's called, I think, Laquan McDonald videoitis, right? It's like almost it kind of kills you. You know,
it's a good point that we were saying, John, that in early on, Paul Vallis, Gary McCarthy, even Lori Lightfoot to an extent appeared to be, okay, this is going to be the battle. Now you're looking at a Mendoza-Preckwinkel possible runoff. So the dynamics have completely shifted.
Mm-hmm. And why has it shifted? It shifted because we in our business say, oh, these people are the front runners. Right? Or we get all excited because Billy Daly can go to people that owe him favors in Boston and say, give me some money. But that has nothing to do with running the city. I mean, look, does the city want another 10 years of the Daly? Come on, man. Yeah. I just talked to Bill. It's not that I don't like the man. It's not personal. But come on, can you another 10 years of Daly?
Don't you think, though, John, that could almost hurt him in the sense that even some of the young reporters, Anna, that you and I deal with on a daily basis, some even at this radio station, are saying, oh, okay, well, they don't know the Daily legacy as we do it, as we know. They're millennials. They're younger. They're looking at an Amira Enya.
Well, and he also inherits, you would think, some of the things that his brother did that weren't necessarily popular, such
Correct.
As selling the parking meters. That comes to mind and other things as well. And I know he's addressed that, but I'm not sure in voters' minds that they will separate the two.
Mm-hmm. Also, you guys, Bill Daly doesn't go to forums. Have you noticed this?
Yeah.
He doesn't go to answer questions like, hey, how did your nephew make that $68 million pension deal, and how did he blow all that money? You know, stuff like that.
That was a bad one, right?
Answer.
A horrible thing. I've seen the Sun-Times giving that a lot of coverage, the $54 million in taxpayer money that went away because of a pension fund that was invested in his nephew's stewardship, and they made $9 million additional taxpayer money. It's
stewardship.
I know. Not the right word for that, potentially.
No,
but
it is the perfect word. It is the perfect word.
But, John, this thing goes, this is a real horse race. It goes, you come back from Christmas, so you're almost into the second week of January, and you're basically 5 weeks and then four after that, right?
I just think that people wanted, before I go, maybe I was trying to clean up, before I go on vacation myself, because, I'm taking the holidays off. And I thought, let's start thinking about this, about who, instead of who the personality is, and who the person was, Chicago's funny, right? Maybe it's all politics all over the country. People think, who's going to win? And then can I get close to that person? Instead of, who's the best person to run the city when it's on the edge of fiscal abyss, Maybe they might want to think about that.
It's a great point. And you're saying the pre-ROM people potentially would be more independent, I think I'm hearing you say, John Cass. Are you saying that the ones who got in only after they saw the mayor get out, is it their clout that bothers you? Is it their sort of acceptance? Are you associating them with something of the politics of past? Or is there anyone in that pack that you think should stay in the race?
I just think when it comes to Lori Lightfoot, there's probably nothing I agree with her on, except that she's smart. And she said, the story's different for each of them, she told me, but each represents different factions of the failed Democratic machine. Daly, Preckwinkle, Chico, Mendoza, they're just different forms of the same failed status quo. And maybe I'm asking all of us, and I know Andrea, you're going to be doing that reporter's show.
Yeah.
And I hope someday you ask me on.
I want you to come on.
Because I'm thinking, two Greeks are too much for
that's
them.
That's right.
Anna's
on the inaugural show.
We'll do some flaming cheese or something.
We will.
Because that's what everyone thinks Greeks eat.
That's right. They think that's what we eat. And that we're always happy and smiling.
and cooking.
And we break plates.
Clearly we are.
I never heard anybody break plates.
I never did either, John, but go ahead.
Right?
Never.
The Yanni commercial.
No.
Right?
Although we do eat lamb.
Perfect.
Poor
Brady. He doesn't know. He's like,
he can't contribute to this.
Ethnics.
He's like, at our house, we just start drinking Jack Daniels about 8 in the morning, Christmas Day. That's
fine Christmas
that's
tradition.
The Irish.
I love it. I love it.
I do too.
Do you guys do anything traditionally Greek, John, for the holidays? Do you do anything?
Well, didn't the three wise men bring lamb?
Yeah, I think they did, actually.
Yeah, I think they did.
Right.
There were lamb.
Lamb and
tzatziki. There were shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
love tzatziki.
Lamb and tzatziki.
I go to an Arab place for tzatziki.
Yeah.
It's on 87th in Harlem, Al Bawadi Grill. They make the best tzatziki, garlicky paste. Like even Brady would fall over for it.
So good.
Even Irish people would
I love garlic. So yeah, I put garlic on my
eggs. I was always going to say white people, but yeah.
Just remember, beware of Greeks bearing gifts. So if you show up, someone shows up at your house over the holidays, something to watch out for. Before we let you go there, John, I want to ask you about the 13th Ward, because I know you were out front on this. You were the first to point out that in the 13th Ward, there were 2,796 sworn affidavits and to revoke the petitions. But the problem was there were only 1,729 people who actually signed petitions, showing that some people signed a sworn affidavit in under threat of perjury they couldn't possibly have done.
Intimidation, perjury. Mm-hmm. I was just out there today. And you can't make three moves on that in the 13th Ward without people recognizing you and saying, hey, are you out there for this thing? Are you here for this thing? Yeah, what do you think I'm here for? To get bacon buns tonight? Yeah, I was there to get information.
You have this young candidate, he's 19 years old, David Krupa, who is basically facing off against Speaker Madigan's pal, Alderman Marty Quinn. You've got a situation where, I guess, is this expected? What do we do about it? The Tribune is calling for there to be potential some kind of investigation of this.
Actually, yes, and I agree with that. And the FBI and the state's attorney are involved, although I did call, I'll give you one for the column tomorrow. I called the state's attorney and I said, did you subpoena the documents? And they're like, no comment. We can't comment.
Can't comment on that?
He can't even comment.
Krupa said he talked to the FBI, right?
What?
He said he talked to the FBI?
He said, and I'm not going to go with it just because of candidate says so, right. But I figured it out that yes, there's FBI involvement here. And what is it? Is it a Madigan criminal enterprise, or is it just a bunch of idiots who overstepped and got all these affidavits? And you guys, I can't imagine Mike Madigan being that, I don't know, zealous, where he'd expose himself to possible perjury issues.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I read it's too aggressive. But I do remember not too many years ago, John, my late wife Julie goes, 7:10 in the morning, hey, John Cass is on the phone.
Uh-oh. Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
He was out doing foot soldier work as a reporter, trying to chase down the fake Republican candidate they'd put up out that way, John Patrick Ryan.
Yeah, did that kid ever get us? The parents were great. Dad was a fireman. He's like, hey, do you want a cup of coffee? And the mom comes out, hey, John. I'm like, hey, where's your son? We don't know.
did a fake fundraiser for him. So John goes out and covers it. But the point to me, at 7:10 in the morning, the phone rings and Julie goes, it's John Cass. I go, this is not good.
Not a good thing, no. Hang up.
It is so good. People want to hear from me.
Hang up the landline.
You probably have that impact on a lot of people, John. Do you? I mean,
no.
No? I'm not. Well, we know he's a nice guy.
John Cass is on the phone. Get the poppy seed coffee cake. Come on.
Right? Get the kuluti.
Come on. You guys know, all three of you, you never go empty-handed to someone's house.
That's right.
True. If I'm going to go to your house demanding your head on a plate, at least I will bring coffee cake from P-Chex or Weber's or something.
Right. There you go.
Right. Yeah. I like to bring D'Amato's cookies is what I bring to people because everyone loves those. So when is this shakeout going to happen with all of these candidates in the mayor's race? What are we going to see? Because February is fast approaching if you think about everybody going away for the holidays.
Yeah, exactly. It comes up so fast. It's all going to be, race card, gender card. You know how it's going to go.
Yeah.
Race card, gender card. You're insensitive. No, you're insensitive. And basically, it's all set up so that the status quo stays in power. And I don't think that's a good thing.
No. So who is Preckwinkle status quo? The union support?
I think they all are. I mean, Preckwinkle, look, Mendoza is going to be in the cone of silence with Rahm, Madigan, and Burke, if he's still out. He's still out.
I was going to ask you about Burke, too.
What's his Preckwinkle. It will be, you know, the archbishops of politics, if it's Preckwinkle, are going to be the SEIU boys, Belanoff and Morrison. Yeah. How would you like that?
Are we going to see a Burke indictment in 2019?
Why do you have to wait for 2019?
Let's see. We get one,
two, three, we're just talking. Nobody, nobody seems to know exactly. Maybe you do, and you won't kind of tell us.
No,
but nobody seems to know.
I don't get.
But being raided three times. When's the last time we've seen that someone's office is being raided by the feds three times?
He's the spider in the web, and there are so many pieces of that web that touch law enforcement, government, judiciary, the courts, everything. Mm-hmm. Lawyers, everything. And he's been in the web. It's like he's been an intelligence operative, right? Yeah. It's like an intelligence operation. So what could he give?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
A lot to
never thought about that. That's a real good point.
A lot we'll be looking for in terms of headlines in 2019. But, John, we got to break it here. But thank you so much for checking in with us. And great column. Go to the Chicago Tribune. Check it out. It's funny, but it's also very powerful. So thank you for...
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, John.
Merry Christmas,
Merry
John.
Merry Christmas,
everybody.
Bye, John.
Let's check out and see what's happening bottom of the hour. And Judy's headlines in her news, I should say. Judy?
More on that wall between the president and Congress.
This is The Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Andrea Darlis is in with us today, as is Pat Brady, the former chair of the Illinois Republican Party. And what do you make of this? This breaking news that Secretary Mattis is stepping down. The president had very nice things to say about his service on Twitter. But then you're starting to see already some members of his own party, including Illinois Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, retweeting the president's tweet about the Mattis announcement and saying that's what happens when you ignore sound military advice, seemingly linking this as not a surprise in the wake of President Trump's decision to withdraw from Syria. A lot in his own party are dissatisfied with that position.
Yeah, I agree completely with our Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who's really been in the last 24 hours a real leader on this issue. He's been everywhere. Mm-hmm. He's a military guy and he understands it. And he has... Listen, a lot of us agree with what he's saying.
Are you surprised by this? I mean, I wouldn't think that Mattis leaving would be a huge surprise.
Well, it might be time for him to go anyway, just because of the time they normally serve. Mm-hmm. But this might have been the thing that pushed him across, to push him out. It is the end of the year. Maybe it was he thought that this is a good time to go. But I'm sure the decision to pull out of Syria without consulting the defense secretary would be a part of it.
Such a even for this president who continually makes moves that are unprecedented, and I think a number of people in his base like that about him, that he makes decisions, this one surprised that inner circle of people that you would have thought he would have consulted for a decision as big as this one.
Well, let's look at the decision he made, and the guy that made the decision. This is a guy that got a military deferment five times to get out of the draft in the 60s Vietnam because he had a bone spur and four other deferments. He has absolutely no experience in the military. And when making one of the biggest decisions in one of the hottest places in the world for military activity, he decides to pull the United States troops out, declaring that ISIS is defeated. Well, the people that know, the people like General Mattis that have served, or Adam Kinzinger, or the people in the Intelligence Committee that have actually gone on the ground and actually read the briefing reports, completely disagree with this. So, and I know people wanted someone in there to go to shake up Washington, but when you have a guy like that who really has no base of knowledge of military operations, pulling our troops out, which ultimately damages our country and totally sells out the Kurds, it's problematic, and that's when you get guys like General Mattis probably saying that's enough.
Mm-hmm. Andy Field from ABC News is joining us now with the latest from Washington, and this, of course, is the breaking news out of Washington that Defense Secretary Mattis is set to retire in February.
He is, and this suggests that yesterday's announcement by the president regarding Syria may have actually put this decision in play where Mattis said, you know what, I think it's time for me to leave. He actually wrote a resignation letter that we just saw moments ago, and he says that he and Donald Trump were at odds on a number of military policies. He wrote, quote, because you have the right to have a Secretary of Defense whose views views are better aligned with yours, I believe it's right for me to step down from my position. The president did not mention that discord between him and Mattis, just thanking him for getting money from Congress for the military and getting other countries to pay for it. He said he's resigning with distinction in February, and he'll announce a new Secretary of Defense soon.
All right. And also the big story out of Washington right now, this looming government shutdown. The president came out this afternoon, just as we were getting on the air, talking about how he will not sign that stopgap measure to keep the government open without the money for border security.
That's correct. What he has now done, though, is kind of changed the wording a little bit. He said what we've done is now call it a slat fence. Metal slat fence. He says we've done that to kind of make this more palatable to the Democrats. I'm sad to inform the president that it doesn't make it any more palatable to Democrats who are voting in a block to say no to this here. The House is voting on whether they can actually proceed on the vote, and because so much is broken here, I don't know how they voted here yet. I don't know that the vote has actually come down yet. But what's interesting is that no matter what the House does, they don't have the votes to pass this in the Senate. So if the president sticks to his guns, he's not going to get the spending he wants on a border wall, and we could see a shutdown tomorrow night at midnight.
Andy, in the middle of all of this, the president signs the farm bill, but then using that opportunity to again push hard on border security, saying that Americans deserve to feel safe. What do you make of all of this? The farm bill being signed kind of sandwiched into this, yet the government shutdown still looming if he doesn't get the border wall that he wants.
Yeah, well, the farm bill was preordained to be signed today. They knew they were going to do this one way or the other. And that's, you know, it's a good thing for farmers in this country and certainly across Illinois, a lot of farm country and people who are listening right now. This is good in terms of subsidies, in terms of helping farmers survive financially. But one of the weird things was that he actually posted a video on his Twitter feed and then played the song. I don't know if you've played this on the air yet.
We got to cue that up. We'll have to see if we can. So he's just set the scene for us here.
Andy, I'm the only one in the room that remembers Green Acres.
I
remember her.
Even Arnold Ziffel the pig was embarrassed to see this.
Right.
It was the president from an Emmy Award ceremony.
Andy, we do have it right here, and then we want to talk about it. So let's roll the audio from that.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.
That's the president of the United States. He's in overalls, right? And this is on his official Twitter feed that he tweeted this out after the farm bill was passed.
This is someone you would think was making fun of the president would tweet, not the president himself. He's wearing a straw hat. He's holding a pitchfork. He's wearing blue jean bib overalls and a white T-shirt. It was meant as a joke. This is when he was doing The Apprentice, and he loved TV time. He still does love TV time. He and Megan Mullally, the woman with the funny voice from Will and Grace, she plays the Eva Gabor part of this. He was playing Eddie Arnold, and they had scenes from Green Acres playing behind them. I don't remember why they did this. Maybe it was to honor the folks from Green Acres. But this was a show, one of the dumbest shows on television back in the 1960s.
Hey, watch it, Andy. Watch what you're saying, buddy. I spent a lot of time watching Green Acres.
It's
one of Pat Brady's favorite shows.
I just found a clip of Arnold Ziffel the pig. This was a pig that apparently was smart, walking in, giving Eddie Arnold character a petition for his civil rights because he didn't want to be treated like a pig. That's the level of discourse we had. I mean, Green Acres was a fun show. Don't get me wrong. Uh-huh. It was hysterical, but quite dumb.
Trying to find the irony in all this. Oh, wait. It's so apparent.
It's right there in front of our faces.
We've come full circle.
Yeah. There's some irony deficiency in some of these tweets. But what was interesting is that the president not only put that on Twitter, he played it again before they signed the farm bill. He thought it was hysterical. He thought it was, you know, this is appropriate before signing a farm bill.
Wow. Megan Mullally has responded, OMG, if you guys need me, I'll be in a hole in the ground. she's part of that video. No one would expect this to have surfaced today, but It has.
Well, it shows the president has a sense of humor.
For sure. And then the next steps of what do we know about the shutdown tomorrow night at midnight is the deadline. If they haven't come up with something, then the government does, in fact, shut down.
That's where we're headed. Now, here's the thing about government shutdowns, and we've had quite a few of them. You know, people say, oh, gee, you're saving a lot of money. You're not paying anyone. That's never the case. They always come back. They always pay the people that they told to sit home. So basically, you and I and anyone who pays taxes here in the federal government are going to be paying for nearly, I don't know, a million people who work for the federal government. There may be more or less. A good number of those folks are going to pay for them to sit home over the Christmas weekend to do nothing and then get a paycheck for doing nothing. So this is doubly bad because, A, it costs the government billions of dollars. It costs local communities a lot of money because those people are sitting home without a paycheck, unable to spend money and just kind of counting their pennies until things go better. And on top of this, this particular decision by the president to say, I'm not going to sign anything without this in it, rattled the stock market again and knocked off another 500 points.
Right. And we've seen a lot of that toward the end. Usually there's a Santa Claus rally you see some this time of year in the markets, and we're certainly not seeing that at this time. Andy Field, we appreciate your time. We know you got to run, and we certainly do appreciate the information. ABC News, Andy Field.
Thank you.
Hey, you guys, I'm telling you, on MeTV, it's one of the best shows ever.
I used to like this show.
I saw the reruns, yeah, for sure.
Arnold the Pig could predict the weather with his tail, and they actually came to Chicago. And he picked up a pig in the bar.
He picked up a pig?
Another pig. Oh. They're in the bar, and Arnold comes walking in with a female pig. It's somewhere around here. And Mr. Douglas goes, where'd you meet the pig? He goes, I met her in the bar. That's what Mrs. Douglas.
You got to look at this video if you have not seen it. Because he's wearing the straw hat, the president, and he is in the overalls, and he put it on his Twitter feed. So it's
with Karen Walker.
That's right, with Megan Mullally. I think she's a Second City alum, or she certainly has some local ties.
Yeah, Northwestern.
It's a funny thing to look at on a day that's not so funny news coming out of Washington. We're going to talk more about this, but first let's check in with Judy Pilek, see what's coming up. Top of the new hour in the news.
The defense secretary leaving, saying his views aren't aligned with the president's.
This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Andrea Darlis is here. Pep Brady is here, the former chair of the Illinois Republican Party. And we've got much more ahead, including a top five of five you won't believe. Richard Roper will review. And there's a great interview he did with Jacqueline Bisset.
I loved her. She was so cool. Well, she is cool.
She
remember
is.
Her from Class with Rob Lowe? Oh, yeah.
You said airport?
The original airport.
Yeah, I remember her.
She's got some observations of for the Me Too movement from a Hollywood screen.
I just saw her listed on of the 800 people that Frank Sinatra dated.
She talks about that.
But she denies it, though, right?
No, I thought she, well, I don't know
Did
about that.
Oh,
we'll
it?
Listen to the interview and Richard will tell. Quickly, though, coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pilek from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. She addresses that everyone warned her about what a mean kind of guy he is on set, how demanding he is, and how nasty he can be. And she said she found exactly the opposite of that to be true. But I don't know about the dating rumors. We'll have to ask Richard about that if she addresses it.
It's interesting.
It is.
The Deep. She was in that diving movie.
Was that the one with the poster that made her sort of famous?
Yeah, the one. Yeah, I used to have one.
Look, you had one of those pets sort of like remember
that. Was right after the Farrah Fawcett poster. Yeah.
Right, it was right below that.
Right by the Farrah Fawcett and the Linda Carter Wonder Woman.
Yeah, there was a progression then we got up
there's
to.
There's a theme there. Very interesting. Right. Yeah.
Lindsay Wagner.
Yeah, now we have my pill schedule. We don't have
That's enough to sort of keep the heart in check. Yeah. We want to check in with Kevin here because Chicago Bears playoff tickets went on sale.
Yeah, the cheapest ticket I could find right now, guys, is $820 if you're interested.
Let's
obviously some interest in the Chicago Bears this season.
$800 for the cheapest ticket?
Yes. That's all I'm seeing on Ticketmaster, which is where you need to go if you want to buy tickets. Right now, Bears in line to host a wild card game, but they still could earn a buy. That possibility is still open, which would be huge for the Bears, and that would also clinch at least one home game. So right now they're in line to be the 3 seed if the season ended now, and they would host a wild card home game.
What has to happen for the things to go really well?
Well, if they win, if they win their next two games and the Rams lose one of their next two, Bears earn the second seed because they have that tiebreaker with the Rams for beating the Rams straight up. So that's probably a long shot. LA has a pretty easy schedule over the final 2 weeks, but I don't know. A lot of people think the Bears broke the Rams after that Sunday night game where the Bears took care of business because the Rams have lost two straight. They lost to the Bears and then they lost to Philly. So I don't know. The possibility is still there. So the Bears still have plenty to play for over the next couple weeks here.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. They play San Francisco next. We were talking.
Correct.
About.
Thursday afternoon, Sunday. And it's a winnable game, but you always kind of feel uneasy about those West Coast games. They just never seem to play all that great when they go out that way, although they did win their last visit against the Niners at Levi's Stadium. So, injury report, we'll see. Eddie Jackson still out, as is Aaron Lynch and Akeem Hicks dealing with illness. I'd be surprised if Eddie Jackson play. I remember he kind of twisted his ankle on that interception against Green Bay. So we'll see there. They're going to need him for the playoffs. I'd probably be surprised if he plays. Same with Aaron Lynch, but they should take care of business Sunday.
Yeah, you hope so. Even though we do love Robbie Gould, we don't want his team to win. And he said he's going to bring his kids to the playoff game.
Yeah,
right?
Robbie had nothing but good things to say.
What
and,
a class
he still,
act.
Still is, makes Chicago his home. And check out his Twitter account. He's trying to raise a bunch of money for Lurie's children, which he still does a ton of work with. And had nothing but great things to say about the Bears. Remember, this is a team that cut him after all those years with the team. Still a class act, still giving back to Chicago, still has his family here. And I think he was in Chicago for the Bears game during the 49ers bye week earlier in the year. So I think he still has that connection with Chicago and just a really good guy and nothing but good things to say about the Bears.
How cool is that? Nothing good but good things to say about him either. It just he seems like such a class act. And for him to even speak up for the Bears and be rooting for them to
and
be...
And openly admit he's going to come to
I
the
know.
Playoff game.
Who does that?
Is which
that,
is pretty cool.
Even though, like you said, they cut him and he was still... He was performing well when they cut him, wasn't he? I
mean, well, he had a down year with the Bears and he did have an inflated kicker contract, but yeah, he's had a really good year with San Francisco, so I guess if that is the one blip on the radar for Ryan Pace, it's probably that move, but I don't know. No reason to be negative right now. The Bears are just too damn fun.
They
this is
are.
One of the most fun seasons of my life. I love it.
So pool your money. I don't know. Can you do a GoFundMe for $800? I mean, I don't know. This is a lot of dough because if that's the cheapest ticket, do they go up from here? I mean, how does... if that's?
I'm trying to see what the most pricey... Pat, you could afford this. $4,675 for a row one ticket.
Yeah.
How much was it, Kevin?
$4,600.
Will Ticketmaster take a two-party check?
Sure.
Get out your American Express black card.
$5,000.
Yeah, that's for a row one seat, section 255. Again, this is on Ticketmaster if you're interested in buying. But the cheapest I can find right now is $820.
I got a guy selling them out front for about
half
that.
That he printed off his old school printer in his apartment in a basement somewhere on the north side.
Dot matrix.
Right.
I was at the last game and there was actually a person who bought one of those tickets that turned out to be fake, sitting two rows ahead of us, and it was so sad to see the people pull them out. The security it was a problem.
Bears warning people again with their media release today, so be careful with that.
Hey, that happened to me at a Northwestern game.
Northwestern?
What? Yeah. Someone hawked
a
Northwestern ticket $20.
Northwestern game.
Are you what was your ticket? $23.
The guy sold me these tickets. I'm walking up there with the kids, and I go, yeah, I'll grab them. But I go, you're going to the ticket line with me.
Oh.
So I literally walked him up.
And then he ran.
Young guy. He took off, and the 50-year-old guy's not chasing the 22-year-old. And my Julie looked at him like, you are such an idiot.
Who does that, Pat? Right. How is
in
that
Evanston,
possible?
I'm the only one to get ripped off in Evanston.
Call Dave Ennett next time.
Yeah, I think you know somebody.
Hey, is he taking you to San Diego, Kevin?
I don't believe so, no. I'll let him enjoy the sunshine.
That should be our GoFundMe thing. Kevin gets to go to the game.
I get spoiled enough with all the sporting events to get to cover. I'm all right.
I'd love to go to that game. All right, Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes here on WGN. The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Andrea Darla sitting in with us today. Happy she's here. And also, we've got Pat Brady, the former chair of the Illinois Republican Party, as we move into the top five at 5 hour. Okay, millennials on the show, listen up. If you had one of these toys, you likely celebrated Christmas in the 90s. And there's one on here that's sort of troubling to me because I had one of these. I had the game Mousetrap.
Oh, I had that too.
And also the Easy Bake Oven. I didn't realize that was if you grew up in the 90s.
I loved my Easy Bake Oven. That was the best.
I know. I love that,
too. Easy Bake was 60s, wasn't it?
You could make a blue...
Thought so, too, but I guess it had a resurgence.
And the light would always break, you know, so it wouldn't turn on. And
the food wasn't really that good, but it was just fun to make. It always tastes kind of doughy, sugary.
It was so cool. Remember, I made a blue cake one time, and then a red... You could make different color cakes, which was
so
cool.
Nobody ask me why I know about an Easy Bake Oven?
Why do you know about an Easy Bake Oven?
I gave you a layup.
Girls.
Yeah, but I don't think we have any. We never had an Easy Bake Oven.
You never had one?
Are they still around?
Yes. You wanted one, didn't you?
That's what I was going to say.
You wanted to bake a purple cake.
Exactly. Now that was my point, Violetta. Good catch.
You wanted an Easy Bake Oven.
Nothing gets by me.
Did you have one of those, or is that too old school for you guys, Violetta?
No. I did have a baby doll, though, that you had to, like, change its diaper. Like, it went, like, blue in the diaper. And then...
What were you feeding it?
No, like, it was just water. Like, it was...
Blueberries?
No, it was just the
color. My sister had that, I remember. It was like you had to put a diaper on a doll. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, and you'd feed it, and then as soon as you fed it, like, 5 minutes later, you'd be like, oh, I've got to change the diaper.
Why was it peeing blue, though? That's
I don't know. I guess they didn't want to make it look too
real. It would have been weird if it was yellow. And...
Right.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of weirder if it's blue.
Maybe it was, like, sanitary water.
Hmm.
Hey, I'm getting to that age. Just watch those diaper jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Just you've been through it with your kids, and now you're going through it again.
As the other long as it's not blue, I think you're fine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, see a doctor if that happens, for sure. The one thing you don't want to have on your kids' Christmas list is, have you heard about the Yelly?
Oh, God, this would be so
this
annoying.
This is insane.
It is. It's totally insane. Let's hear there's an ad for it that's out, so see if this makes you want to have it more or I'm going to have it less.
Yelly's separately.
A fuzzy spider-like toy that moves faster the louder you yell at it.
Okay, that would drive me crazy. I can't even stand anymore if you turn on the TV and the commercial's too loud, you know, because the commercial's always louder than the show. I just have to mute it now. I'm at that age.
Especially the kids' toys commercials.
Yeah, I can't do it.
It's really aggravating some parents because if their kids want it, then, you know, you think you got to get it. But I think it's going to be one of those gifts that it's more given to...
Like,
you know,
a gag gift.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Why would you even want to teach your kids the louder you scream at something, the more it reacts to you?
Oh, no, this is what you give to somebody else's kids.
There you go.
There we go.
Yeah, you got
it. The new drum set.
Yes.
Yeah. Or the new electric guitar. Remember those?
Yeah, your brother's kids. That's who you give it. Hey, you want a Yelly?
Yeah.
Why not?
Horrible.
Okay, so when your kids start yelling that they want it, just start yelling faster and harder over them. And then say, do you really
very
want that?
Experience.
This is how it works. Yeah.
Pro tip from the parent, yeah. Judy mm-hmm. Pilak. I love it. You will not get that. Want me to say it louder?
Yeah, and just it's brilliant, actually.
Even the ad is annoying.
I know, they do that on purpose, because I bet that's appealing to kids.
The tune is a little bit catchy. Yeah, you want a yelly.
I think it is. It's like kid-friendly. They like that. Okay.
Yeah, right.
It is time. You guys know what time it is. Here we are. It is...
5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlanter. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we will. Checking in at
number 5.
Thanks, Orion. Congressman Luis Gutierrez, we know him. He spat hot fire on Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen. You would think things are winding down for the holidays, but there's a lot going on in Washington. He called her a remorseless liar, decrying the shame of the Trump administration's family separation policy. At a House Judiciary Committee hearing today, Congressman Gutierrez used his entire allotted time to absolutely go after Nielsen, as well as her predecessor, John Kelly, and really the entire Trump administration.
But I have to say the all-time record for lying in the face of all the evidence was a tweet you, Madam Secretary, sent out on June the 17th. And it says, we do not have a policy of separating families at the border, period. That's your Twitter account. That's what you put out. Yet you came here today to tell us exactly is your policy of separating families and children from their families. Another lie.
Yeah.
Boy, he went on to say, thank God there wasn't a wall that stopped Jesus from seeking refuge in Egypt. Thank God there wasn't a wall then.
Hmm.
So much for the holiday spirit.
Right. We have a bonus cut here, just if you want to hear just a little more, Congressman Gutierrez.
But it is repugnant to me and astonishing to me that during Christmas, I like to call them the holiday seasons to be inclusive. But during Christmas, because the majority always wants to just call it Christmas, that during Christmas, a time in which we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, a Jesus Christ who had to flee for his life with Mary and Joseph. Thank God there wasn't a wall that stopped him from seeking refuge in Egypt. Thank God that wall wasn't there. And thank God there was an administration like this, or he would have too have perished on the 28th, on the day of innocence, when Herod ordered the murder of every child under 2 years of age. Maybe I haven't gone a lot to Bible school, but I know that part.
Okay, some grandstanding there for sure, but immigration, one of his central issues all along. Pip Brady, what's next for him?
Well, those speeches tend to get better when you're not running again.
Right. Right. I have nothing to lose, yeah. Speech.
Mayor Emanuel's doing all these press conferences talking about pension reform. Sure. And it's very aggressive when you have nothing to lose.
Tunnels from downtown to O'Hare that are self-funded by billionaires. It's all coming together, yeah, on the way out the door. That's what happens. Let's check in at...
Number four.
This afternoon, President Trump, prior to his remarks on the passage of the farm bill, first addressed the funding of the wall and the collapse deal on the continuing resolution to keep the government open. It's a situation that will come to a head really in the next 24 hours. Friday at midnight, the government will shut down if they don't have a deal for some sort of funding of the government. But he doubled down on his intent to allow the shutdown should the wall not receive the proper funding.
I've made my position very clear. Any measure that funds the government must include border security. Has to. Not for political purposes, but for our country, for the safety of our community. This is not merely my campaign promise. This is the promise every lawmaker made. It is the solemn promise to protect and defend the United States of America. And it is our sacred obligation. We have no choice.
It's interesting because this started as it came as a surprise to a lot of fellow lawmakers, people within his own party, who said that when we thought we were going home, we were going to just, the stopgap measure was going to be what was going to happen. And some people had already hopped on planes and got out of Washington. But you did see this morning Fox and Friends taking the president to task. It's usually one of the most friendly forums for the president's policies. And this morning saying, you promised a wall. Where's the wall? Why are you going away without the wall? You know, there's a Democratic incoming Congress. House, and that, what's the chance of it? This is our last chance, Mr. President. What are you going to do? He heard from his base pretty strongly, and then you saw this move today.
You know what? I think this will be figured out, though, because he also heard from his golf pro, and he's got an 8:20 tee time Saturday.
So, like, I want to be in Mar-a-Lago.
We got to get this baby worked out. I'm playing golf Saturday morning.
You're probably right. And incidentally, it is the top tweeted now topic, the GoFundMe page. We the people will fund the wall. It is now up to over $8 million. This is an effort by a Purple Heart recipient, a triple amputee veteran. When we started this show, it was about $6 or $7 million. Mm-hmm. It's over $8 million now toward this $1 billion
this
goal.
This morning when we woke up, it was like $1.7 million. His goal is a billion, which is a huge number. But
so what do they do with that money when they don't hit the billion?
I think as
you buy Bears tickets.
Yeah, you only get two.
Three Bears tickets.
Three Bears tickets. After the beers, the hot dogs,
we're going
and the
game.
Yeah, we can go on $8 million, the four of us. Yeah.
Just make friends with the Purple Heart recipient. We'll make him one of the foursome. Oh. No, this is, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to watch and see what happens with that, because I don't know how you can even turn over that money to the U.S. Treasury and decide to make it for the wall. But maybe this is just to send a message and those people will get their money back. I don't know. We'll see. We'll watch it, but it is growing,
boy,
really quickly. Do we have a bonus cut here? We got one more cut.
At this moment, there is a debate over funding border security and the wall, also called, so that I give them a little bit of an out, steel slats. We don't use the word wall necessarily, but it has to be something special to do the job. Steel slats.
So don't call it the wall. Steel slats.
It looks like Tinker Toy stuck in the sand south of El Centro. I mean, have you seen the pictures?
I saw them, yes. They're like spaced apart so that you can't get a human through them, but they're slats. They're not really a solid wall.
No, and maybe that works, but...
Like 2018 Stonehenge.
Yes, exactly.
So far, no word on how Mexico's paying for it. But we'll keep you posted on the shutdown and all things regarding the wall coming up. But we want to check in with Judy Pilak, see what's happening bottom of the hour in the news.
A good kid who made a bad mistake.
Hey, Bulls fans, enter for your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls Night experience at chicagotribune.com/Bulls Quiz, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune.
Nice. It's Andrea Darlis. I'm Anna DeVlantis. Rose off today. We've got Pat Brady sitting in studio with us, and we're in the middle of the top five at five. So, checking in at...
Number three.
During his monologue last night, Stephen Colbert joked about a court settlement ordering the Trump Foundation to sell off assets and donate them to charity after being charged for misappropriating funds out of New York.
Now, as part of the court deal, the Trump Foundation has agreed to sell off their assets and donate all the proceeds to an actual charity. Those assets, just three items. Two hideous portraits and a Denver Broncos helmet signed by Tim Tebow. Wow. A souvenir of a famous but flawed flash in the pan who, despite being loved by evangelicals, fell from grace. Also, Tim Tebow's helmet.
Oh, gee. Oh. He really kind of stepped into it here with the, I mean, this was a small relative to their wealth amount. It was about $3 million, this foundation, but it just seems like things got awfully messy there. And the AG found a lot of stuff, including the $7 that they used to send Don Jr. to the Boy Scouts. I mean, is that what you use a charity for?
That's where they shut her down. But there's not one aspect to his life or business dealings right now that's not an investigation.
Yeah, it seems as if there'll be a lot to come in 2019.
Yes.
For the president.
Interesting.
We are going to take a break here. We're going to check in with Judy in just a second. But coming up, Richard Roper will be here with some reviews. You might want to go see a movie. It's holiday time. Some people have some time off. And there are a couple of things out there that are well worth seeing. Jacqueline Bisset. Also, there's an interview with her, Richard did, regarding a number of things, including her new movie. And then her response to and observations about the Me Too movement. It's not what you would think, what she has to say. I think you'll enjoy hearing her comments. But let's check in with Judy Pilak now. And the news, by the way, is sponsored by Townstone Financial. Here's Judy Pilak. This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro is off today, but we have Andrea Darlis sitting in studio with us. Pat Brady has been gracious enough to give us his time this afternoon.
You know, I got to say, I usually do this with guys.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it more fun?
Better? Smells better. More
well,
pleasant.
That's
it really does.
Right.
I walked in this morning to do Cochran Show. It smelled like a locker room.
Yeah. So eighth grade boys locker room.
Yeah, you guys were talking about Speedos. I heard you.
Well, yeah, Steve lost a bunch of weight. Got healthy. So for his Christmas present, I got him a
Speedo.
You know, he wants to show that body off, so I got him a Speedo.
To. Yeah, bathing suit body.
Well, the lady that I was buying it from kept saying, you know, you can't return this. And you go, you know, this is not for me. Please.
Sure, it's for a friend.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. It's for a friend.
Yeah, she bought that, I'm sure. She was all over it. But he has lost weight, and we're really proud of him for that. And
that's hard to do. I mean, Andre's lost a bunch of weight too. Everybody's healthy here. That's good.
How is that possible before the holidays to lose weight? Isn't it? We see all these reports now that we're getting fatter and our waistlines are getting bigger as
right.
a rule.
I did see that. Yeah. We're
and so fatter. You're losing weight.
I did. I lost a little bit of weight, which I needed to. You know, everyone goes kind of go through that phase.
That's a lot,
you look awesome.
Yeah. Aw, thank you. Aw, you guys make me blush.
Did you want a cookie?
I do. You've seen me eat. All of you guys, do I ever miss a
You're
meal?
You're an eater, for sure. You like to snack on all the
food. Ro and I got to go out to dinner a couple of weeks, and between the two of us, we'll probably consume 9,000 calories.
I believe it.
You what? Between the two of you?
We'll consume 9,000 calories.
You can't count. And most of it alcohol.
And most of it's here, right?
No, that the place we go, it's like there's four different...
Entrees,
and yeah, I was trying to count up last time. I go, this is about 9,000 calories.
Calories don't count during the holidays.
The
Pat.
Thing
it's
is,
it's a miracle.
Right. It's not about looking good. It's that you feel good when you work out.
That's work true. Out. Wait, what are those words? Work
you know,
out.
I mean, you just feel more powerful and like able, you know, to do a flight of stairs without panting.
Yeah, just let your
which
suits out.
I still can't.
I exercise so much more in the summertime. I mean, I'm so more likely to either take a walk or take a bike ride or whatever.
See, I'm the opposite. I like in the winter to get a sweat on, like in the middle of it freezing, it's dark out. Because the summer, I'm outside anyways. So in the winter, I'm just dying to get a sweat on.
Plus, you're tan in the summer. So if you can't tone it, tan it, and you feel great.
I'll just lay in bed
good point.
In the winter.
You can't tone it, tan it.
Should I get up? I think get on the elliptical? I don't know.
I better tan it. So we are in the middle of the top five at five, guys, and we got to get back to it because we still have the two and the one to get to, and then we have some other stuff to get to, and then Pat Brady's got to leave us, and Richard Roper is coming, so there's a lot coming up. But let's check in at
number two.
Kevin McAllister had to fend off two bumbling burglars all by himself on Christmas in the iconic 1990 movie Home Alone. If only he had had a little help back then. Now, 28 years later, Macaulay Culkin is reprising his role as Kevin McAllister, fending off burglars in this new ad. But this time, help has arrived in the form of his Google assistant.
Mom? Dad? Hey, Google, what's on my calendar today?
You have one event called House to Yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Google, add aftershave to my shopping list.
Hey, Google, remind me to clean these sheets later.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Too bad AC.
Someone's at the front door.
What do I owe you?
Looks like you paid online.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
It's so true, though. Kids growing up now, they have their smart speakers, and they ask them everything. My seven-year-old will say, so-and-so, what's the weather today? To find out what she has to wear for school. And like so-and-so said, an alarm for me. And, you know, how tall is the Sears Tower? And then she'll ask all those things. You don't even have to be a smart parent anymore because it's there.
It's
it
like
tells
the
you
Jetsons
anything.
For
how
me.
Back in my day, how do kids do research papers these days? Because we'd have to go to the library, check out the books,
it's
do the
so
research.
Easy.
Now everything's online. So how do you write a...
There's databases.
How do you write an original paper,
though? Well, you still,
though?
It's instead of like a physical book, those theories and statements are still online.
So you can plagiarize them online now instead of going and copying.
Teachers have software now. They can run your paper through the software to see if you're lifting lines, too. So you got to be careful about that because teachers are tech savvy, too. It isn't just the kids. Mm. Well, the kids tend to be a little bit ahead of the adults is what we find.
How much time do you spend in the library at Illinois State?
Oh, a bunch. Ton of time in the library for me, Pat.
Great place to nap.
Nice and quiet.
How much time did you spend in the cafeteria? Did you like the food at ISU? Was it good?
We actually really had great dining food at ISU. I highly recommend checking out that campus if you're interested in taking a kid to university. Fear the bird.
Fear the bird.
UIC has Sbarro.
Sbarro.
That's great. Kevin gives a food endorsement, though. That's pretty big.
It is huge.
So that's like yet another thing to check out at ISU. All right, guys, let's check in. And the final number here, which is here it is. Whoops, there.
Number one.
What would Christmas be without a bit of religious fun? Jimmy Kimmel decided to have God played by Billy Crystal and Satan played by Foo Fighters frontman David Grohl on his show to play a small game called Who Gets Stuck with Ted Cruz.
We figure out who goes where, you know.
Yeah, that's a big game. Who goes where?
Oh.
So, which one of us is going to get Ted Cruz?
Rock, paper, scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors.
Boom.
Oh. Rock crushes scissors.
Oh,
he's always yours.
Wait, you won. He's yours.
No, I don't want him. I don't want Jimmy. That face for eternity.
I don't want him either.
Tough luck, buddy. I won.
Dave Grohl makes a great devil, though.
He totally does.
Looks like him.
Ted Cruz has responded, by the way. I just noticed. If you look at his Twitter feed, he says, I think that Jimmy Kimmel has not gotten over the fact that I kicked his whoop at hoops. Remember that charity hoops game they had where there was all that awkward smack talk they did? And he saying that he kicked Jimmy Kimmel's butt. So that's why he's mocking him in that skit.
That's good. At least Ted Cruz responded and laughed. I think people need to laugh a little more.
Especially at Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
It's just easy to
Count Chocula.
I know. There's just so much going on there. There really is. But he's a fan of the show. He's a regular, so we love him.
The top five at five.
That's yes. Well, did everyone hear that?
Top five at five.
All right. Yeah. We got it. We close this thing out We are going to check in with Judy and get what's coming up in the news. But we do have to mention, just looking forward to tomorrow's broadcast. Ro will be back, and we have some interesting things going on that you won't want to miss. It's Judy's last day after 32 years.
Wait, here what?
It's your last
tomorrow?
Day.
Andrea, I'm leaving. I didn't want to tell you, but I'm going.
Oh, God, I didn't even document your day today.
Oh, but you will.
I'll be in there.
I already took the pictures, don't worry.
Okay, good. I'll post them.
32 years without a mistake.
Without a mistake. Sometimes I choke and people aren't paying attention to jump in and help me.
Right.
But
no one helped you. No one helped you.
I persevere. Yeah, there's three of you sitting in there. I'm like, someone please
wait,
come to my rescue.
Like you were dying.
Is she okay?
I kind of was, but I had to suck it up and still perform my duties.
True professional.
Yes, thank you.
Did Kevin even get up out of his chair? He's about 8 feet from you.
He was watching me. And like he was watching a TV show.
I think I was the only one that actually jumped in.
He did at the end when I was turning red.
I saw everyone flailing their arms like, "What's happening? Oh my god!"
She was turning blue and holding her neck.
I was trying to like punch myself on the back and I couldn't reach. I was like, "All right." I was doing the signal for choking.
Kevin's like, wow, that looks like it hurts.
Yeah.
Kevin was enjoying a nice glass of water.
Think she's okay?
There's a little like bubble next to Kevin's head. It's like, oh, I'm hungry.
The universal symbol for choking, though, yeah. is like Judy she's going, like, I'm out of here.
Right. Yeah.
She's choking.
Maybe mic it's drop. Food. If she's choking, maybe there's food somewhere.
Hey, Judy, will you literally do the mic drop?
Yes, I can. Yeah, I will do that.
Do you have something special planned for your last day? Like a surprise for everybody? I know we're going to surprise you with a little, you know, something after, but are you going to do anything on your last day?
For you guys? What
I
do
don't
you
know.
Mean?
Just
I
think something that to close about... out the, you know, your time here.
Are you going to do like a Bette Midler on Johnny Carson or something like that? Like sing a song? Or are you going to go out with a flourish?
You know, I'm going to do my job very well, like I've done for 32 years, and then I'm going to leave.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap is right.
Queen Judy, the same till the very last day. Well, we'll do something special tomorrow, I'm sure. So we'll,
I think so.
Listen in for that, because that'll be very well worth it. And also, Willie Wilson will be on the show tomorrow, we should say, and not in the normal political kind of way that we have mayoral candidates on. He's going to be the special musical guest for our Live Music Fridays, because remember, Willie is a singer, among many other talents that he has. So that's all coming up on tomorrow's broadcast. And as I said, Rokan will be back. But let's check in with Judy at this time to see what's coming up top of the hour in the news.
A wake underway for a Chicago police officer killed in the line of duty.
This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We have Andrea Darla sitting in studio today. We're happy she's here. Pat Brady here with us for a few more minutes here. And we're so happy you also devoted some time with us, because we know you're leaving for a warmer climate very soon for the holiday.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah, we've been hearing about it all afternoon. By noon, I'll be on the beach.
Checking the weather, rubbing it in.
We're happy for you.
Well, thank you. You're more than welcome to come down if you want. Okay. We've got a big enough place.
Okay. I'm in.
Just show up.
Is Cochran coming in a Speedo?
Ooh, that's a bad visual.
Ooh, can't make that day.
Hey, he's showing off the new bod.
He's
why not?
He's swimming laps at the Y right now in his Speedo with his bathing cap on.
Yeah.
Good for him.
That's and he's visual. The only one there.
Right. It's like the scene in Caddyshack where everybody runs from the pool.
Hey, Kevin, you ought to come down.
Baby Ruth?
Why don't you come down to Cayman's?
I'll put the sunscreen on for Cochran and you. You know, just bend over and I'll rub you down.
Well,
how about that? That's an
I'm
offer.
Absolutely not going now.
Because that visual?
After that visual.
Trying to be a team player here.
We played a round of golf with young Kevin a couple summers ago, and he was traumatized by the end of it.
The questions they were asking me.
By the time we got to the 18th tee, Cochran goes, you know, we got to shut up or this kid's never
going to
come
back.
Yeah,
but the most ruthless question came on the 18th green.
Can you give us a hint of what it was?
No, I cannot. No.
What was it about?
Sports trivia.
Definitely sports trivia.
Then why wouldn't you be able to share it if it's about sports trivia?
I don't know.
It was girls.
That's not sports trivia, is it? Was it female? Was it women's sports?
Yeah,
it's women's basketball.
Yeah, it's women's basketball.
That's always a hot topic.
WNBA.
Was it really?
No.
What? I'm thinking you're cleaning it off.
Yeah.
I don't think we're ever going to know what that is.
Yeah.
We're going to find out off the air.
But it was fun.
It was fun. Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you guys had fun. Kevin is a bright shade of red right now. I want everyone to know. He's thinking about it.
I'm laughing so hard thinking about it.
Anna, we had we.
But
hung
I looked
out.
At Cochran. I go, he's only 25 years old, man. We got to lighten up on this kid because we kind of beat up on him the last.
No,
six
I enjoyed home. Every moment. I just wasn't sure what to say around you guys. But now you know. Now when we golf, we let it all out.
Now you know how we feel. Anna and I hung out with all you guys at the conventions. Remember Brady, Kevin,
yeah. Right? And things
well, we
like
got you a room. Remember
Cochran?
You what?
Didn't we get you a room?
You did get it. You got Anna
you
in our room.
In Cleveland.
Right, that's right.
Because we were staying in the Fleabag Motel where I walked in and there was a guy in my room. Anna walked in, there were ants in her sink.
Yep. And then we got you over to the other one.
And we're like, hey, do you know Pat Brady? And we got into the Ritz.
It was pretty cool.
It was nice.
Well, the highlight, though, is after you guys got in, Geraldo Rivera came walking in and the bar was right there, right? So we all start screaming, Geraldo. He was not amused.
Conventions are a wacky time. You really see a lot of personalities.
Right. Our geeky side.
And the talking heads are out, and you see people who are with each other late at night that you didn't know were with each other, and you thought, well, okay, this is just the way it goes. These things stay on the road. Isn't that the rule?
Hooking up at the convention.
We have coming up the stories that matter with Judy Pilat from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. And right now, we want to talk about some of the things that are sure to go out in the year 2019 because it's right around the corner.
Yep, that's right. From USA Today, five things that are going away in 2019. You know those billboards that you always see for Chick-fil-A and there's a cow? Those are all going away. They're nixing everything to do with cows, including their cow calendar, which apparently is a two decades old favorite.
Wow. I wonder why they're doing that. Just new marketing kind of thing?
Apparently, yeah. And then also GM, if you want to get a Chevy Volt or a Chevy Cruze, might want to do it in the next few weeks or so. They're axing the Chevy's going to ax the Volt, the Cruze, and its full-size Impala. So no more Chevy Impala, no more Cruze.
Didn't
and no
Cochran
Volt.
Have an Impala?
Kevin, was that the Blue Thunder or was that the blue car he had?
That was the that was when he was the Iceman.
The Iceman. Yeah, that's going away. Mm-hmm. Everything from Henri Bendel. Oh. They're closing their stores. Known for their jewelry,
clothing.
Handbag.
Oh, man. He's closing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you've never been. Is that where you bought Cochran's Speedo?
Oh, my God. I can't.
That's where you get his Speedo. Haagen-Dazs is axing four of its flavors in 2019.
Tell me it's not Bailey's.
Oh, you're lucky it's not.
Okay. What is it?
It's not. The sweet coffee cream caramel, the vanilla tangerine, the pomegranate dark chocolate, and the chocolate dark chocolate almond all going away.
Can't imagine why those are going away.
The dark chocolate almond sounds pretty
good. That's actually pretty good.
That sounds good. The other
I would love
so
that.
The
Bailey's is so good. I don't know if it actually has alcohol in it, but I've been eating it since I was like six.
That's awesome. And the last thing going away in 2019, this according to USA Today, you may use Connect on Apple Music to stay abreast of what your favorite artists are doing, but soon it'll be time to say goodbye to Apple Music's Connect feature. Does anyone still use that anymore?
No, I don't. Does anybody use it?
I never knew how to use it.
I've never heard of it.
Maybe that's why it's going away.
Yeah, that's why.
That's what's happening.
When's that store closing?
You don't go to the store. Isn't it just
Kevin,
in New York?
What are you doing tonight, Kevin?
I would love to go shopping with you. Pat, can we use your credit card?
Yeah, absolutely. I got a $500 limit, same as I had in college.
You can talk about sports trivia.
Women's sports trivia.
Oh, yeah, plenty of sports trivia when Pat and I hang out after the show.
Maybe you guys should do a show on WGN with women's sports trivia. That'd
be drinks
fun.
And sports trivia.
Podcast, yeah.
No, I don't think management would really go for that one.
It's on the stream. It's okay.
You can call it the 18th hole.
Oh, very good. I love that.
That's very good, Violetta.
It is really good.
He's thinking now. Maybe the wheels are turning. He's like, wait a minute. There's something there. I think we can make some money off this. I don't know who would be a sponsor, though, but you'd could make some money.
Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Henri Bendel.
Okay. They were the first to sell Coco Chanel.
Oh,
yeah,
now we're talking.
Yeah.
It's like they have one. Okay, there's 845 Michigan Avenue.
Yeah.
So they do have one.
I'm sorry, what do they sell?
Better get out there. Women's jewelry, handbags, Speedos. No, I'm kidding. They don't sell Speedos.
No, I don't think you'd get a Speedo there.
No.
Also going out in 2019, the flossing, the floss dance. The arm flailing, you know, the whole thing that people do, and they were teaching other people how to do it.
But how do you just eliminate it from society? I mean, people are still going to do it.
It's not
going to
be a trend anymore.
They're saying it's kind of done.
So you're a nerd if you're doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're kind of saying it's over.
I thought you were a nerd when you were doing it originally.
It looks very nerdy.
But people still love it.
But the Macarena is still cool, right?
That's always cool. Okay, that's totally cool. Gender reveal parties, they're out as well.
Oh, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Gender reveal parties.
No longer.
Had a good run.
Yep.
We're not having genders anymore, so how are you going to have a party?
That's exactly the explanation.
Let the baby decide its gender. It's 2018.
Gender is a spectrum, and children may have a non-binary gender identity, meaning they don't identify strictly, so why commit them at that point in their life?
Why before they're teach even them born? Words?
Maybe that sounds like something that you explain to a woman you've been dating for 6 years. Right. How can I commit with these? You know?
It's a spectrum, baby. Yeah, exactly. It really is. Exactly. It's, you know, it's, I can't nail things down like that. Big old sleeves, you know, like the bell sleeves that you see in a lot of women's clothing.
They're gone.
They're kind of like going out. And I kind of am happy about that because it always seems to get in your food.
Yes.
Do you notice that?
Always.
Mm-hmm.
I like those.
Happy about the swingy sleeves going out. Chicken coops, and which I'm surprised by, and then keto desserts and
chicken,
you know,
like, coops.
People having their
That's
chicken
big.
Coops.
People keeping chickens at their homes.
Like the hipsters do that, even in the city here. You see some chicken coops in some places. You got the keto diet as well. That's
what's certain. Keto?
The keto diet, yeah. Keto. It's like really intense, like all greens, nothing to eat, grass.
But you can eat meat.
Oh, yeah, and meat.
You can eat meat on that diet?
Yeah, it's just no carbs, basically.
Or cheese.
It used to be called the no-carb diet.
I was going to say it used to be called the Atkins diet.
All
sounds
right,
like
guys,
a heart attack diet.
Yeah. That's out, so don't do any of those things in 2019. We've got Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes.
Working, Anna?
This Richard Roper stepped into the studio and immediately everything fell apart. The lights went wacky.
I'm sorry.
My microphone fell off of its little hanger system. And
well,
so this is what happens.
Can I just tell you that has happened to Ro about 25 times over the years when we've worked together. It's usually while he's interviewing the Secretary of State.
Right.
And he's doing the Rokan thing. Well, you know, of course, in the Battle of Versailles, as we've learned long ago, and he's going into his whole thing, and all of a sudden, it goes like, and then he's like,
I was told those are held together, truth here, with hair ties.
Well,
it's like a ponytail.
It's amazing, because, of course, we're at the brand new, you know, still shiny, sparkling WGN studios, 50,000 feet up. Above the city of Chicago, everything's wonderful, but it's still in the closet. Oh, well, you know, the microphones, they'll be fine. That's why Roger Daltrey used to always tape his mics up so he could twirl them, you know, that mic around back in the day.
Take that mic before you finish.
Take this mic.
I was going to say, give it to Judy, and then she could do a mic drop tomorrow since it's already busted. There you go, Judy. We got you a mic.
Awesome.
She's going to drop a tire iron instead on her way out.
Because I might not drop it. I might just throw it down, so they'll break again.
Judy's going to go out in style. You
That's
just
amazing.
Know it.
Always. You should have seen the pit crew that just came in here, though, folks. It was like when
Thank
you watch the
gentlemen.
NASCAR race.
I know.
You know the races?
Just
they're like
that.
Oh, no. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is falling behind. His pit crew comes out, though, now, and he's back in the race.
Our engineers are just amazing here at WGN. And then just jump into action just like that.
Wow.
Richard.
Well, thank you, everybody. I enjoyed seeing you guys. I'll
well,
be
you
leaving
walked in
now.
And the lights went haywire, and then all of a sudden my mic falls off. Richard, I don't know. What's going on there?
It's all me. It's just like every hotel room I've ever stayed in, I could never find the light switches. You spend the first 8 minutes going like, where did they put this? And it's like, oh, I get it. The living room light is in the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
The hallway light is in the room next door.
Uh-huh. Or the one light switch you do find, you keep flicking. You're like, it's still the same light that I don't need.
And the radio clock from 1997 is never going to stop blinking. You unplug it and it still keeps going because the guy who stayed there before you needed to get up at 4:30.
Oh, I
hate
that.
Because he's Dwight Schrute and he's trying to become the new head of Sabre.
Doesn't that happen more often than not?
Oh,
that's so true.
God,
yeah. Well, I know we want to get to some movie reviews. But I do. Okay. Can we just promote what we're going to hear at 6:30? Because
yes,
you had
please.
A fantastic sit down with Jacqueline Bisset, and she addressed a number of things and made some news with you.
Yes, it had a count. What a privilege, guys. Jacqueline Bisset. You know, she goes all the way back to The Detective with Frank Sinatra, Bullet with Steve McQueen. She was named the sexiest woman in the world when she was in The Deep with Nick Nolte, and then over the years, you know, really became kind of an acclaimed actress, Golden Globe type performances, and has been in some, you know, miniseries, you name it. 74 years old, still working. She's in two movies right now. She plays plays Sarah Jessica Parker's mother in one movie and Famke Janssen's movie in another movie, that Asher, the thriller we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And I had a chance to talk to her on the telephone. And I will say this. I don't know if we saved this or if we clipped it off, because it was really just, you know, the conversation. But at the very end, when she said, "Thank you, Richard," it was the most regal "Thank you, Richard," I've ever heard in my career. That. And I said, "Well, you're welcome, Your Highness." You know, I just, I didn't know what to say, because she's still got that, you know, she's French British, but actually born British. She lives in California, but she still has that British, you know, that beautiful British voice.
That'll be his ringtone. Thank you, Richard.
Well, that's a great idea.
I should put that
idea
as my ringtone for you.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Ooh, that'd
I love
be nice.
That. So we can pass it out to
right now, Anna has, answer me, Anna. It's Richard. It's me. I know you're there. I know you're there.
Pick it up.
Stop doting over your daughter. Jeez.
That's how it is. That's just the way it goes. But we have, let's get to, what movies are we talking about, Rich?
We got a ton of movies coming out, and we talked a little bit about Mary Poppins Returns the other day, but I think we should talk about that again, because obviously this is a huge movie. And one of the cool things about this film is it's actually a sequel. A lot of people are thinking it's a reboot, like they're retelling the story that we all watched as kids. All of us, of course, on television, because we weren't around when it was released in theaters. But so this is an actual sequel. It takes place 20 some years after the events of the first film. So the little kids in the first film are the grown-ups now, and they have kids, and Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins. You say, well, wait a minute, how can Emily Blunt be Mary Poppins if it's a sequel, because Julie Andrews was Mary Poppins? Well, that's because Mary Poppins is magical.
She is.
She looks how she looks to whoever sees her, and she never ages. She comes out of the sky with an umbrella, people.
And Emily Blunt is magical too.
And Emily Blunt, I gotta say, you know what, she is magical in this film. First of all, I'm giving it 3.5 stars. The only reason I don't give it 4 stars is because it's about 2 hours and 15 minutes. I think that's a little long, especially because so many people are going to be bringing the little ones to this, because it does have, you know, it's perfectly family friendly fare. There's just a few musical numbers where I felt in the middle, like, that's when you're going to probably take them. You know, if you've got the 7-year-old, you're going to go to the bathroom with the kid.
Would they ever introduce an intermission for movies that long?
They
Is that just
should.
Against the law?
You know, there's some movie houses that'll do that once in a while. I think the Music Box up on the north side here, and some other theaters across the country, especially if they're playing an old classic. And of course, Quentin Tarantino a couple of times has actually made movies where he's built intermissions into them.
Oh, that's
so you have
great.
To. I love that idea.
Do you remember the last movie I saw with an intermission was Gandhi?
Oh my gosh!
I know,
right?
At the theater, yeah.
You know, halfway through, and he still had hair, and he was still selfish. People don't know the first 25 years, Gandhi was a maniac. I'm kidding, by the way.
But that was a long movie.
Yeah, his name was Jimmy, and he was a hustler. You know, and he was like kind of like Rick in Casablanca. People don't realize that. But we do love Mary Poppins Returns, and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who of course is the force behind Hamilton, is the kind of the Dick Van Dyke role, if you were. He's the lamplighter narrator. And he has so much fun because he gets to have the British accent. But he's, you know, we haven't really seen him on screen a lot. We've seen him a million times, obviously, on stage, or, you know, recordings of that. But he's got it. You know, he's got what a star
has. With Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he stole
how
the show.
Great
and how
was
hard
he?
Is that to do with Larry David?
And he played
was
a
phenomenal.
Jerk version of himself because he had this big ego. And in real life, I mean, here's the guy, I can tell you, today, this morning, and this is the day of Mary Poppins Returns opening, he was on a bus in New York City riding with his son to take his son to school. He doesn't want his son to be, you know, obviously he could take a limo. And it's not, oh, look at me, I'm a regular person. He's doing that for his son.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was doing this morning while all of this other, you know, still going to do press and everything. He started his day by getting on the bus in New York City with his son.
I bet he's just comfortable on the bus, too. He just seems like that guy who just, like, whatever, you know, he's just, you know.
Oh, he told a great story, too. I mean, I saw this on his Twitter feed. There was someone sitting next to him who realized who it was, but he didn't want to bother him because he was with his son. So the guy just showed him his phone, and he was texting to a friend, I know it's him. And she was like, tell him you love him, tell him you love him. And then she's listing all the things he's done. And then so he screen grabbed that, Lin-Manuel did, Miranda. Uh-huh. And he said, to the friend of the guy who was sitting next to me, it really was me. And he really was very sweet about it because he never made a fuss over me.
Oh, that's so cool.
Isn't that cool?
We love him for so many reasons.
Yeah.
He's just
he should be our friend. Come to WGN and hang out with us, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Can you do an interview
You have nothing
with us,
else
Lin?
Going on.
Please. We'll be nice to you, too.
We're
we'll
nice
ride the
everybody.
Bus with you.
Almost.
Yeah.
Except for Roe when he's not here.
Do they sing the same, just a spoonful of...
No. You know, that's actually a great question, because everyone's wondering, are they going to do, you know, remixes? I think the smart thing was, there's an overture at the beginning that had, like, almost when you're seeing a musical at the theater, but the songs are all new and original. And cool. And that was the same reason, you know, because Julie Andrews was asked if she wanted to somehow make an appearance, and she said, no, this is Emily Blunt's time. This is her Mary Poppins. I don't want to steal the show. Again, just so many classy people around the show, this movie. And Also, in addition to the stars we mentioned, Colin Firth, Academy Award winner, Meryl Streep, Academy Award winner.
Oh, my gosh.
Dick Van Dyke shows up in this movie. Cool. It's no spoiler at this point. Everybody knows he's in it. And at 92, and it's not a stunt and it's not CGI, yes, he dances. And cool. if that doesn't, you know, warm the cockles of your heart, you're cockles free, folks.
It makes you want to just bring the grandma, the mom, the whoever, everyone, multi-generational, and check it out because everyone can appreciate the Mary Poppins.
Yes.
2 hours ago, Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeted, me, success has not changed me, ironically. Also, me buys this from my house, and there's a big full-size NBA Jam video game.
That's fantastic.
He's got it all going on. What else do we have, Richard? We want to do how many movies we have here before we...
You have a list. I can go off the top of my head and tell you, though, because we don't have to... We can go
let's take
order.
A break here.
I can tell you this for sure. Yeah, why don't we take your normal break? And we just talked yesterday to Steve Carell and Robert Zemeckis, the great director and star of Welcome to Marwen. But I hadn't reviewed the film yet. So wouldn't it be something if it turns out I thought it was the worst movie of the year after we talked to them? Mm-hmm. Probably not, but who knows? Let's find out.
They're such nice people, I hope not. We'll find out, but we're going to check in with Judy to find out what's happening in the news. Bottom of the hour here on WGN.
Another resignation in the Trump administration, a looming government shutdown, and a miserable day for stocks. We'll have it all.
You have the most beautiful eyes. And the most amazing heels I've ever seen.
They're called stilettos, but they won't be invented until 1954. It's weird, huh?
A lot of weird stuff happens here in Marwen. A lot of stuff that makes no sense. Like how you got here.
I just moved in across the street.
Was a clip from Welcome to Marwen. Steve Carell stars in it. Richard Roper, mm-hmm. I know you sat down with Steve Carell and also Robert Zemeckis, who directs it, and pretty incredible to see them here at WGN.
Yeah, they were so lovely to talk to. And even you can tell from that clip that this is not an easy movie to get into, so no. I have to set it up. You know, we're going to talk about Aquaman in a second. I can tell you this. He's a fish in a man. Okay, now we know the plot for Aquaman, right? But Welcome to Marwen is based on a... Yeah, spoiler alert, sorry about that. Welcome to Marwen is actually based on a real life story. A man in... early 2000s, a Mark Hogenkamp was viciously beaten outside of his neighborhood bar by 5 thugs. When he finally recovered and woke up from the coma and regaining his motor skills, he had lost all memory. And he created this fictional miniature village in his backyard called Marwen, and it was set during World War II, and he's on an alter ego who's like Captain Hoagie, who's kind of a brave version of himself. So this movie alternates between his life as a guy who's still trying to find his way after being, you know, horribly beaten and still kind of afraid of the world and has a lot of, you know, anxiety, and the miniature world. And because Robert Zemeckis is the director, this is the guy who directed Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He directed Polar Express. He's always had this amazing capacity to combine the technology with these human stories. So we jump back and forth between the real world and then the animated world. Now, I like the movie a lot, guys. I'm definitely recommending it. This is the kind of movie you really have to be focused on the film. You really have to be, in the moment. If not, and you should never show up late for a movie, but you show 10 minutes late for this movie, and you're going, what is happening? Dolls are talking.
Yeah,
you know, there's motion capture going on. So I think it's brilliantly done. I do think some people are going to go to it thinking, oh, it's a Steve Carell movie. Oh, mm-hmm. Bob Zemeckis did Who Framed Roger Rabbit and mm-hmm. Back to the Future. This is going to be a romp. It's not. It's not always serious. It's sometimes really funny. It is one of the more unusual films you're going to see. But again, when you realize this is all based on true stuff, there's a documentary that came out called Marwen Call, which was the name of the village in real life. Mm-hmm. And when you watch the documentary, you realize almost everything you see in this movie really happened. It's just that now they can bring his imagination to life through that motion capture technique that they have, you know, that Robert Zemeckis is a pioneer.
Subject for a movie. I saw Janelle Monáe interviewed, and she said that her role was a Nazi killing doll. So the dolls are pretty intense in terms of their.
Yeah, well, here's the thing: like Janelle Monáe, Leslie Mann, this terrific cast. Everybody in his real life, whether it's the woman across the street, his physical therapist, the woman he used to work with, Isa Gonzalez, who's a terrific actress. They are all represented in the village then, you know. So if you're the cool waitress that's loyal to him is now a gun-toting, you know, female Nazi-fighting soldier. And the cool thing is none of them think, oh, this is weird. They all want to be a part of this. And in real life, they do as well because they understand this is his way of dealing with this horrible trauma. The 5 Nazis that he creates in this village are basically doppelgangers for the 5 thugs who kicked and beat him to within an inch of his life.
Oh my god!
So in his village, his Captain Hoagie gets to kill them over and over again and kind of get his revenge. Whereas in real life, the gentle Mark Hogenkamp isn't interested in revenge or even really, you know, thinking ever about his attackers. This is his way of dealing with it. So it's a fascinating thing. And the fact that Bob Zemeckis and Steve Carell wanted to do it tells you that there's a movie there.
That there's something really incredible
check
to
it
explore.
Out. Welcome to Marwen.
And then I'm sorry, did you tell us how many stars? Did you
Three and a half stars.
Three and a half?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, it's just the time of the year where you get a lot of quality
really films.
There's, you know, there's 10 or 15 films right now in theaters worth your time.
All right. I usually catch up this time of year on a lot of good stuff.
Yes, you do.
And so we're going to come back, take a break here, talk about Aquaman.
Okay.
The man who, what, swims? Is that what you determined?
The fish who walks, the man who swims.
He's part fish, part man.
Aquaman.
I used to love Aquaman. And he was like animated.
Oh, my God.
All right. We've got Judy's news. Is it 2 minutes coming up in 2 minutes? Yes, it is coming up in 2 minutes.
It's coming up when Judy says it's coming up.
Really, it kind of is. She has one more day here after 32
years.
Here's
some news, all right?
So she tells us when it happens.
Aquaman, no one greater than Aquaman, king of Atlantis.
We are talking about Aquaman. This is the Rokan Show. Me and the Blondes, Andrea Darlis is here. Richard Roper is here. This has taken some heat from people trying to defend the Aquaman that he really should be a movie. I mean,
and I will say that I don't remember hearing that particular theme. It's sort of like Spider-Man. Uh-huh. Well, Aquaman's always kind of considered like the guy at the reunion that the other, you know, Marvel and DC characters
they
would make fun
him.
Of. Like, oh, hey, could you still talk underwater? So can my kid in the bathtub.
Great superpower.
Remember, you know, on Entourage, Vinny Chase starred in Aquaman. You know, James in the movie in the TV series, James Cameron did Aquaman, because even then they're like, well, what can we have him be? He really can't be Superman. And it became like a big grossing film. So Aquaman, Jason Momoa, and people know him from Game of Thrones,
the Dothraki leader.
You know, the hunky. I'll tell you, I like him because he reminds me a little bit of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Like, he's this physical specimen, but he's got a sense of humor about himself. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows he's not the world's greatest actor, so he's finding the right vehicles. In real life, by the way, married to Lisa Bonet, and they have the world's most beautiful children.
Oh, my gosh.
And he seems like, I don't know him, but he seems like a really cool guy. He's pretty well suited to that. We met him in some other DC Universe movies where he was a supporting character. Now he gets his own movie, Aquaman. And of course, you know, if you're going to give him his own movie, you got to hear the whole story, because the real deal is his father was a lighthouse keeper and his mother was the queen of Atlantis, and they had a forbidden romance. So he's always been almost like a Harry Potter type, where, you know, they call him like a half breed, you know, because he's not completely at home in the surface community above the water, but then he's not really accepted down in Atlantis. But he is the rightful heir to the crown. So now it's going to be all about whether or not he's going to become the king of Atlantis. Actually, it turns out there are 7 underwater kingdoms, guys, not just Atlantis. Wow. And they're thinking about waging war against the humans. And he's got a brother who's very resentful of him. And that sounds exactly like Thor and Loki, because it is. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing about Aquaman. I give the filmmakers a lot of credit in the studio. They know he's a silly character in some ways, you know, because, yeah, he wears tight jeans and no shirt, and he has Fabio-length hair and a trident, and he can, you know, he can swim and go really fast and kind of talk to the fishies and stuff like that. It's not quite as compelling as Iron Man or Spider-Man.
No,
or
what do
Batman
you say to a fish?
Or Wonder Woman. So they have, you know, there's a lot of good humor in it. As they're doing it. It's not completely campy, but it's borderline camp. That's why I'm giving it 3 stars, because, you know, going in, within the first 10 minutes, you're like, okay, they're going to have some fun with this.
Right.
Like, you know, there's the classic
scene.
They're
winking at you.
Where Aquaman, because, you know, he's out there in the world. He's in a bar, and he's drinking.
Of course he is.
He's having pints. You know, this is, of course, up in Earth, not down below.
Does he get rid of his fins when he's out of the water?
He never has fins. He's
like
Aquaman. Yeah, he doesn't. I know in some iterations there's been, he doesn't have gills or fins.
No.
He's just Jason Momoa. And I did wonder why he wouldn't just cut his hair, because it keeps getting in his face all the time because he's swimming. And also, if you are going to go see the movie, this is one of the things I really enjoyed about it, because even though most of the people are underground, Amber Heard plays Mira, who's like a princess, and Nicole Kidman plays his mom, the queen of Atlantis. Every scene underwater, they have different outfits on. I'm like, where? There must be like an Oak Street down there way beneath the sea.
Is.
I'm like, where do they get these? Like, the villain, he's got a silver helmet with spikes, and he's got this long purple coat, and he's got these skin tight spangly jeans, and it looks like he's Elton John going on tour. So it's very fashion forward.
That's
for
like
an underwater adventure.
Underwater mall.
It really is. Yeah. So have fun with Aquaman.
Have fun, and what are you giving it?
3 stars.
3 stars.
There you go.
I would
That's
have
good.
Fun with that one. I'm going to see it, and I love Jason Momoa. So
me too.
We'll go see it together, Andrea.
Okay.
Let's check it out.
You guys enjoy.
All right, so we are going to be right back, and then. Oh, we're going right into this. Okay, we have an interview that Richard did.
We're going to do a little segue here, as Johnny Carson used to say back in the... Now we're going to go from Ed McMahon to Karen Valentine.
To Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah, and who probably talked to Jacqueline Bisset. So, yeah, guys, I had this, you know, this is actually a really cool thing for me. As long as I've been doing this, once in a while you get to talk to somebody. I'd never talked to Jacqueline Bisset before. 74 years old. One of her first movie roles was as a love interest for Frank Sinatra in a movie called The Detective. She worked with Steve McQueen in Bullet, still has one of the great action sequences, chase sequences of all time. She was in movies like, you know, The Deep with Nick
Nolte.
Sold
a lot of movie posters.
Yeah, remember the t-shirt? I mean,
Pat Brady has it over his bed.
Huge, yes. Mm-hmm. So she became a huge star in the 60s and 70s. Rich and Famous with Candace Bergen, did a movie called Class here in Chicago.
I remember that. It was Rob Lowe.
Yes, and Rob Lowe and Andrew McCarthy. She was Rob Lowe's mother, and Andrew McCarthy was Rob Lowe's classmate who had an affair with Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah.
And as Khan will tell you, he auditioned for the Rob Lowe part and did not get it. True story.
Khan did?
Khan, young actor in training, auditioned for the preppy role.
I could totally picture
Khan in 1982
yes.
wearing the exact same stuff he wears now, the pocket square, the loafers, and that's even when he goes swimming to see Aquaman.
I see him as the Andrew McCarthy character, but
I do too.
And I'm sure he would have liked that character because that's the one where they made love in the glass elevator at the water tower place.
I remember that.
Now,
that
was water tower place? I think it was. I could be wrong about that. It might have been another mall here in Chicago. So we got a chance to talk to Jacqueline Bisset. She's in two movies right now, including Asher, a film I really love, in which she plays the mother of Famke Janssen, who's a terrific actress.
She's
in the X-Men movies. And Ron Perlman's a hitman, and her character has Parkinson's. So I talked to her a little bit about that. I also talked to her about Me Too. And whether she experienced any of those types of moments back in the 60s and 70s. Very interesting answer. So we're going to talk to Jacqueline Bisset.
Nice.
She was on the phone from her home in California.
First of all, congratulations on the performance at Asher. I thought it was just a wonderful piece of acting.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the film. For people who don't know it, this is a film in which the great Ron Perlman plays a hitman of a certain age, shall we say, and he becomes romantically involved with Famke Janssen, and you play her mother. Can you tell us a little bit about your character, Jackie?
Yes, I played Dora, who's has developed a degree of dementia. And who is pretty nasty. She's quite a unsympathetic character. She's obviously putting her daughter through, not consciously, of course. She doesn't really recognize her daughter. But she's in that stage of dementia where she doesn't have a lot of command of what she's saying. She's mean and she's very sad and angry and very lost in her confused mind.
Yeah, you mentioned her sadness and although she does treat her daughter almost cruelly, and as you mentioned, often most of the times really doesn't recognize her. And yet, as we learn about her, her state and her condition, I think we do, feel sympathy for her, and obviously for Famke's character, because almost everybody knows somebody or has been, related to somebody who's going through this, and it's no fault of their own, to say the least.
Absolutely. I really wanted to play this part. This part is, I was quite surprised that they came in my direction to ask me to do it, and there were some adjustments. I felt she wasn't connected enough to the story when I first read the script, and I suggested that that she be a reason that would bring Ron Perlman's character closer, and then that situation, when they did a little rewrite on it, suddenly now I was linked into the story because I was a potential person who he might kill.
Yeah, exactly.
To help her.
Exactly. And well, that was a brilliant suggestion on your part, because I was about to say, without that scene, it's almost as if you're in a different film altogether. And you're in this, very intense, moving family drama between a mother and daughter and the mother going through what she's going through. But then bringing in Ron's character, you now are tied into the story in a very integral way.
Yeah, I felt it wasn't this. Much as I wanted to play somebody like that kind of a character and do the English sort of Cockney thing and the... and be very, very unglamorous. I also enjoyed that. That was really fun to be as you know, as kind of lost and confused within that role. It was I really enjoyed it, and I wished it had been a slightly bigger role. But that was, but at least it linked. It was linked into the story more than it had in the initial script I read.
Absolutely, and you mentioned the decidedly non-glamorous aspect of the role. I mean, is that the biggest compliment you can get if someone sees the film and doesn't even realize it's you until maybe they see the closing credits?
Well, I don't
credits?
Know if that's been the case. I don't know anybody who's seen it, and I guess it would be a compliment in a sense. In a sense, it would be, but. It would be. But, you know, disguise, the question is you don't want to disguise. Disguise, obviously, anybody can put on any funny hat or any outfit and you could be unrecognizable. But the point is if the character is felt and believed, that's the biggest compliment.
When you're portraying a role like that, do you create kind of a history for the character? Do you think about the kind of person she was before this horrible dementia set in, and did she have a loving relationship?
Up to a point, but you know, sometimes the history you create for yourself is very disappointing when you actually when you've only got a few scenes to be able to show something. I've done films where I found out everything about the character pretty much, and there's been historical characters, and you know, sort of when she left the room, did she leave on the right door or the left door? You kind of find out, you can find certain information in certain circumstances where you know everything, but it's irrelevant. Because the director has the scene written, and those, you know, that punctiliousness about what actually happened is not really relevant, because you can't do it, you know, because it's the way it's been staged or something. So I don't know, up to a point, but it depends. It depends. This character was somehow always with me, that character, via my life in England and being around people and being around my mother, who had dementia for many, many years, and so it was. She was sympathetic to me. I felt that that state was. I know a lot about it, and I have empathy for it, and I like the idea also of her being really bad tempered.
Well, I wanted to ask you as well. You're playing a mother in another movie that's available right now, Here and Now, with Sarah Jessica Parker, and this character is very much in the moment, and very much has a different relationship, obviously, with her daughter, but does seem to almost take a delight, or can't help herself from almost constantly undermining her. Can you talk a little bit about that role?
Yeah, I didn't see it that way. On the contrary, I don't see. It's funny how she's been described to me as she's overwhelming, a bit overwhelming mother. She comes to meet her daughter in New York. She wants to spend time with her. She has no knowledge of anything of what's happened in the morning. She's very self-involved, but she's also very wanting to be with Sarah Jessica's character. And Sarah is just cutting her off on every level, so she's very disappointed. I don't think she has no way of knowing her daughter's a successful musician. She's no way of knowing what it could possibly be. She probably thinks she's rather grumpy and not being very friendly as a daughter. And I don't know what their relationship was before I arrive, but obviously she's come from somewhere to get into New York, and she's looking forward to hanging out, and she wants to be part of the music scene with her daughter, which I find actually terribly funny. And there's a line when Sarah Jessica says something like, "Oh, have you joined the band and no one told us?" Which I thought was a very funny thing, because to a daughter to say to her mother, meaning stop getting in the middle of all my details of life, you know. I don't see her as a bad mother. I see her as a loving mother. From my point of view, I take it from, you know, she thinks she's being kind of, she has a boyfriend, and she's sharing that information in a sort of rather coy way with her daughter. But her daughter really is just like, oh my God, just sort of basically get out of here. Yeah, leave exactly. me alone and let me go through this pain I'm going through. But of course she doesn't say what it is. So I'm defending, I can't remember my name, Jeanne.
Yes. Mm.
They asked me to do it in, first we started in English, and then they asked me to do it in French, so I popped over to French.
Yeah, which is, of course, which you're fluent in, and you have occasionally, you know, acted in other languages. We only have just a couple of minutes. I don't want to keep you, but I do want to ask you quickly, too. Of course, you know, you have this amazing career going all the way back to working with Steve McQueen and Frank Sinatra. I want to ask you, as you were coming up in the ranks, and you obviously know about it, all the things that are happening now with Me Too and the way actresses are treated, did you experience any of that, or how did you handle it?
Very, very little. No, I didn't really. I mean, in the very beginning, I thought people were sort of, there were a few sleazy characters around. When I was in England, I met a few sleazy characters, but I really didn't know what to do about it. I was very, very innocent and sort of well brought up. And, I mean, somebody said, well, you know, you have to defend yourself. And I said, well, I'm going to defend myself at all costs, and I will never do anything that I'm going to be ashamed of. I came to America with such a determination, and I'd heard all these horror stories about Hollywood. And in fact,
that was Richard Roper's interview with Jacqueline Bisset. She was addressing the Me Too movement there, mentioning that her experience was different than maybe other actresses.
Yeah, and everybody has their own experiences. And it's interesting, too, because we only have so much time to talk to her, but you look at some of the people she starred with, you know, Frank Sinatra, Steve McQueen, legends, but kind of old school kinds of guys. And she did say, and I've talked to her, or I've heard people talk to her before, like Frank Sinatra, yes, he did hit on her because she actually replaced Mia Farrow.
Mia Farrow, who was married.
And he hit, because they had split up. And then he did hit on her once, but she said as soon as she put him in his place, he became a protective big brother type.
Interesting stuff.
She sounded very delightful.
Amazing career.
Full interview, WGNradio.com. You can check out Richard's entire, in its entirety, the whole thing right there. But let's check traffic right now with Violetta Podramatic.